imagination, or indeed surplus to requirements in our memories this morning. Because it is also the date that for many people, well, I don't know, that might be my first question, for some people in this country, particularly today, people on university campuses, it is also the date upon which a process that ended in genocide began. But shouldn't they at least take today off from protesting?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, memorial events are taking place in Israel to mark the second anniversary of the October the 7th attack. Sir Keir Starmer has urged students here to think again before taking part in pro-Palestinian demonstrations planned in several cities. The Prime Minister says it is un-British to have so little respect for the Jewish community. The Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, has echoed his remarks, speaking to LBC this morning.
I would say to anybody thinking about protesting today, 2 years on from the appalling events, the atrocities that we saw on October the 7th, I would urge them to pause, to reflect, to remember our shared humanity, our responsibilities towards one another, and how many Jewish people in our country will be feeling today, not least given the terrorist attack in Manchester.
The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has rejected claims of racism made against Robert Jenrick. The Shadow Justice Secretary has doubled down on comments about a visit he made to Handsworth in Birmingham.
It was absolutely appalling. It's as close as I've come to a slum in this country. But the other thing that I noticed there was that it was one of the worst integrated places that I've ever been to. In fact, in the hour and a half that I was filming with news there, I didn't see another white face. And that's not the kind of country I want to live in.
The recording obtained by The Guardian was made at a dinner earlier this year. Mr. Jenrick will promise to tackle so-called two-tier justice in his speech to the Conservative Party conference in Manchester later. Police have disrupted a gang believed to be behind 40% of phone thefts in London. It's suspected of smuggling up to 40,000 stolen phones from the UK to China over the past 12 months. 46 people have been arrested. Teachers who train in subjects including physics, chemistry and maths are to be given tax-free bursaries. The payments of up to £31,000 are part of efforts to tackle shortages in some areas. Trainees will also be able to access £15,000 to specialise in special educational needs and disabilities. And Jaguar Land Rover will restart manufacturing at its sites in the West Midlands and on Merseyside tomorrow. It's also announced a new financing scheme to support suppliers after the month-long disruption from a cyber attack. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 9 at 94.88. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, cloudy but most places staying dry. Patchy rain further north. A high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I've got two questions for you this morning. One is going to be about quantity, and one is going to be about quality, the quality of judgment, if you like. One is going to be about numbers, and one is going to be about appropriateness. There are student protests planned today against the actions of the Israeli government and the Israeli army in Gaza. If you find yourself thinking, why are we talking about this again, I would very, very briefly remind you that it's October the 7th. So I accept that query and that criticism on other days, not in the immediate aftermath of a terrorist attack upon a synagogue. And obviously, as the genocide continues, we can't focus upon that every single day. But to me, this date is deeply significant. And I presume that's true of everybody. And Sir Keir Starmer has described protests planned to mark this anniversary with an outpouring of sympathy and solidarity with the Palestinian people as un-British. The protests that we're talking about, and this I think is really key, and I may need a little bit of help in the unlikely event. Well, actually, do you know, I've been doing this job so long that I think we've moved now from me being able to say without any fear of criticism or pushback, well, I'd be amazed if any students are up yet, to actually recognising that in the modern world, the students' relationship with their educational institution, given how much debt they're going to come out with at the end of their studies, is very, 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 very different from what it was like. Oh no, here it comes. In my day. it isn't true anymore that everybody is getting stoned in the snooker room and staying in bed until Countdown comes on. I don't believe. So, hopefully people are listening. I was in Oxford on Saturday night with quite a lot of students in the crowd, and some of them are very kind about how much they enjoyed this programme. So I probably have some listeners among the student body of this country. And what they can help us with is what these protests are, because I don't know, and I'm sorry that I don't know, but I don't. More than a dozen protests, I read this morning, will be held at universities to mark the anniversary. So, even the word protest seems odd in this context until you remember that they will be events designed to focus upon the aftermath of the October the 7th attack rather than the attack itself. And I'm conscious that this could turn into the phone-in that we had last week about whether or not people should have taken Saturday off from protesting about what's going on in Gaza because of the proximity, the chronological proximity, and of course in Manchester, the geographical proximity to the terror attack on the synagogue. I'm going to read you a couple of early messages coming in just in case you wonder why I sometimes sound, what would the word be? A little discombobulated by the conversation that I'm conducting with you. Because it's extraordinary how unpleasant people can be. This is from Simon already. He's listened to the same introduction to the programme that you've listened to. An outlying of the position that I'm going to take quite a lot of persuading that it wouldn't be wiser just to let today be about remembering the victims of what I described as the biggest mass murder of Jews since the Holocaust. Simon's been in touch to say, you are vile, O'Brien, talking about a genocide on this day. You have no shame at all. So this is, and Simon, I suspect, doesn't realise this is part of the problem that we're examining today, because the allegations of vileness or anti-Semitism for mourning, if you like, mass murder, shouldn't change according to who's done it. So you're going to call someone anti-Semitic for criticising the actions of Israel, then I wonder how many young minds respond by going, crikey, am I? And that's how these marches end up and these protests end up being polluted, that's my word, by people who are obviously expressing anti-Semitic views and conflating all Jewish people with the actions of the Israeli army and the Israeli administration. So the minute, Simon, you reach for that kind of insult and that kind of obnoxiousness, I think a less robust mind than mine, a less sturdy heart than mine, could respond by thinking, well, okay, I have got a problem with everybody of a certain ethnicity or a, because you keep treating me as if I do, but I categorically don't. It's extraordinary how quickly we divide on this, and that's why I, in my slightly pompous way, think that we have to keep talking about it. So, with respect, James, says Helen, there you go, Simon, that's how you do it. With respect, James, shouldn't we stop talking about the protests and focus on October the 7th and what happened? You are doing the same as the protesters. And Mark responds immediately with, morning, James. I say, yes, they shouldn't protest today as long as the Israelis don't bomb Gaza today. And listen, it may not be a valid explanation for Helen, but I'm talking about it partly because this is the position that our Prime Minister has chosen to adopt on this morning. One of the positions that our Prime Minister has chosen to adopt on this morning. He's also described protests as un-British. Protests today as un-British. And I don't know how we ever build this bridge. I don't think we can build a bridge for everybody. But people who passionately feel that October the 7th marks the beginning of a process that ended in genocide, and people who, whether they're Jewish or not, mourn the horrors of the worst mass murder of Jews since the Holocaust. I don't find it very hard to hold both of those positions in my mind. I really don't, even after 2 years of talking about it and taking some pretty hideous treatment from both sides of the divide, people claiming that I'm shilling for Israel, particularly in the early days of the aftermath, where it seemed pretty clear to me that even Netanyahu, with his record and colleagues, was going to have to do something very robust, ideally to get the hostages back. That dream, I think, dissolved fairly quickly, or at least the belief that that was his top priority dissolved fairly quickly. And then latterly, the ludicrous claims that the actions in Gaza are justified, while simultaneously trying to defend the idea that foreign journalists shouldn't be allowed in to chronicle what is going on. I still don't find it very hard to hold both of these thoughts in my head at the same time. I don't think you'll respond to this if I'm describing you. But when I say the worst mass murder of Jews since the Holocaust, if there's a little bit of you that rolls your eyes or sighs, you need to give your head the mother of all wobbles. And similarly, if you balk at language like genocide or mass murder or carnage in Gaza, then you too need to give your head a bit of a wobble. And the reason why that twain will never meet is very straightforward. You do not value, or you do not see, or you do not feel the same pain. And I guess I understand that. For reasons that we've explored a million times on this program, there's a superb piece by Stephen Bush, for me, one of the finest writers in this country at the moment, who is Jewish, writing in the Financial Times about how the importance of the modern state of Israel has grown as anti-Semitism in this country has increased, but that the relationship with Benjamin Netanyahu's iteration of Israel is fracturing and getting worse. It's the worst of all possible worlds, in a way. The Zionist, in its simplest form, belief that Israel needs to exist outside Europe as the place that Jewish people go to next time Europe falls under the jackboot. At the same time, the current administration there is alienating and not supported by huge parts of the diaspora. So it's, I think what I find really hard, and thank you for letting me do my thinking out loud on this, most of you, what I find really hard is the impossibility of resolution. You know, even if there is a ceasefire and everybody wants a ceasefire, well, no. I really, really want the killing to stop. But even if there is, I don't think anyone would feel it felt permanent. I don't know if it ever will. So you've got two positions here. And I've never really done a phone-in where I've asked, are we wasting our time having this conversation? I'll be talking later in the programme to somebody who lost his parents on October the 7th. And that, you know, in normal times, would be the only way in which to reflect upon those events on a day like today. But given what has happened since and the strength of feeling among British people of every faith, ethnicity and background, you kind of see why the protests are going ahead on October the 7th, on the anniversary of the atrocities. So Keir Starmer says this: this is not who we are as a country. It's un-British to have so little respect for others, and that's before some of them start to decide to start chanting hatred towards Jewish people all over again. I don't have debates about whether chanting hatred towards Jewish people is acceptable, okay? I don't have any debates about that. I never have done and I never will. It's disgusting. It's genuine echoes of 1930s Germany. But I do have debates and conversations about the relationship between appropriateness and principle. And I want you to tell me why you feel that it is appropriate for people to choose today to protest against Israeli actions in Gaza and to sit in solidarity with the people of that region. 1,200 people murdered by Hamas 2 years ago today, 251 hostages taken. The other part of the problem, of course, is how big are these protests? It's kind of like Helen would have the mother of all points when she says we shouldn't even be talking about it. If it was just like half a dozen students turning up with placards, you know, media is a terrible thing sometimes. It's a massive magnifying glass. But the problem is that if you are criticizing the Israeli government, a lot of very loud voices in this country feel that you are not allowed or that you are not sincere or authentic when you also express your horror and your heartbreak at rising levels of anti-Semitism. And I'm loath or a little bit reluctant to say you are clearly a big part of the problem if you're doing that. If you don't allow people to abhor anti-Semitism and abhor what's going on in Gaza, then you are part of the problem. You are not part of the solution. I don't know what the solution is or indeed what it's going to look like, but why would it be wrong, in your view, to focus today solely upon the events of 2 years ago and not on what has happened since? You may persuade me. You may sway my thoughts. My sensitivities may be shifted. But right now, that phrase, right? Words are my business. And that phrase, the worst mass murder of Jews since the Holocaust, 2 years ago today, means to me that today is about them. And yet, I live in a country where people are, I don't know how many, but enough people to draw the Prime Minister's attention and the Prime Minister's focus are going to choose today to hold events. And look, some of this language is very difficult and very unpleasant. But I'm quoting the Times newspaper, not quite the organ that it used to be, but a lot of the journalists on there, despite the best efforts of their editor, still do a very good job. These phrases are hideous. More than a dozen protests will be held at universities to mark the anniversary. They include events to, quotes, honour our martyrs, end quotes. Well, they're hideous if you think they're talking about Hamas fighters. They're not hideous if you think that they're talking about innocent people who have died since October the 7th, 2023. And celebrate, quotes, 2 years of resistance, end quotes, since Hamas murdered about 1,200 people. And the Prime Minister talks about Britishness and... Well, we did this last week. I don't know if we can ever unravel this because it's not actually binary, despite the best efforts of so many people to pretend that it is. If you, right up to and including Benjamin Netanyahu, describe anybody who criticizes what has happened in Gaza as anti-Semitic, then what is a young student who is, for good or for ill, animated and heartbroken by what is going on in Gaza supposed to feel in response to that? You're going to call people who criticise what's going on. Well, anyway, that may be a direction in which the conversation goes. But what I want you to tell me is why today we can't just focus on the people murdered by Hamas on October the 7th, 2023. I may be a little strict with the early callers. I know my introduction has gone around the houses a bit, but I may force you or encourage you or insist that you focus on that. Why can't we just remember the victims of the October the 7th terror attack today, because it's October the 7th. And tomorrow, we can return to condemning and castigating Benjamin Netanyahu's administration in the strongest of terms. We can weather the ludicrous accusations of anti-Semitism or Jew hatred when we do that, when we say those things about Netanyahu's administration and his far-right supporters. We can do that tomorrow and the next day and the next day. But today, why can't we just remember the people who were murdered on October the 7th, 2023, on October the 7th, 2025? I don't get that. I really don't. Do you?
LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Can your phone drown out irritating noises in your videos? Can anybody hear me over this? Luckily, Audio Eraser on the Galaxy S25 Ultra gets rid of background noises in seconds. Can your phone do that? Galaxy can. Get 15% off Galaxy S25 Ultra with code S15.
Buy from Samsung.com by the 21st of October 2025. Use code at checkout. Voucher code can't be combined with any other offer. Samsung account login and network connection required.
The Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are here. 2 days of big deals on electronics, home, kitchen and more that'll make you feel less like and more like feel like a big deal. Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October. Exclusively for Prime members. Shop now.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
20 minutes after 10 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. So I think I used the phrase un-British yesterday. I used the word un-British, not a word I use very often because I'm never quite sure what it means, but freedoms. I associate Britain with the Enlightenment, probably more Scotland than England, if you really want to get into the weeds of it, but Britain and the Enlightenment and the protection of human freedoms, and in fact, a move away from religious persecution and religious oppression. I think those are, they're not unique to Britain, but well, I think they're British values. And that's why I thought that Shabana Mahmood's plans to further curtail our right to peaceful protest was profoundly un-British. And yet today, Keir Starmer has chosen to use that word, un-British, to describe the peaceful protests that I was describing the curtailing of as un-British. And Keir Starmer is not a stupid man. He has a point. Which is just another dimension of the question that I'm asking you today. And that question is this. Why wouldn't we all recognise that on the second anniversary of the worst mass murder, the biggest mass murder of Jewish people since the Second World War, we should just think about those victims. And tomorrow, and tomorrow, and tomorrow, we return to our fearless and often very, very viciously attacked critique of what wiser heads than you or me have now concluded is a genocide in Gaza. You can do both. That was almost the phone-in. Can you do both? But I have to keep believing that you can, regardless. Otherwise, we're all lost, aren't we? Arshid is in Luton. Arshid, what would you like to say?
Yeah, so, hi, James. How are you? You all right?
Yeah, good, mate. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so, I get up in the morning. I'm taking my kids to school. Right, happy. But as you speak today, a child in Gaza dies, you know? A parent has to get up and take their child to a mortuary, to a graveyard, because Netanyahu is not stopping the bombing. And here we have it, 7th October, it's still going on. For Gaza, it's been 7th October every day since 7th October, 2 years. So, I mean, the protests should go on. I mean, why shouldn't they?
Because of the date.
So, like, as we're speaking today, the date, the 7th of October, and Netanyahu hasn't stopped bombing Gaza. So why should we stop today? Would you stop today if your child was being bombed, if your child was being killed?
If my child was being bombed or my child was being killed, I don't know that I would. I don't know that I'd do anything. I don't know whether I'd protest. I don't know whether I'd have given up entirely on life. But my child is not being bombed or killed, and nor is yours. And on October the 7th, 2023, that the families of about 1,200 people did see their loved ones and their children and their parents and their siblings and their friends being killed. And history has always marked those moments with commemoration of those moments, not with, I mean, I don't know what the word is, mate. You've made your point very powerfully and calmly, and I thank you for it, because it's certainly not whataboutery. But the idea that you can't just allow the people mourning that event to have, if you like, the floor today, to have a clear run at their own grief and commemoration, with the constant caveat, Arshid, because this is really important, that yesterday and tomorrow, we return to the condemnation and critique of Benjamin Netanyahu's genocide in Gaza. See, some people are going to be furious with me for using that word. I read out a message earlier. And some people are going to be furious with me for suggesting what I'm suggesting in the context of the modern protests. But that's, you know, that's my burden to bear. I just don't see why it's so difficult to show some grace, even if you argue that the other people don't show grace, because categorically, some do.
Look, at the end of the day, there's no difference between my child and your child. No. A child is a child, okay? A child has a right to play, right to go to school, you know? So currently, Netanyahu is committing a genocide on children. 12,000 children had to die. And the funny thing is, our government is so tied up in immigration. Well, we need to put it straight that our government, Keir Starmer, is fully complicit in the genocide, and he's still not stopped.
But none of this. I hear you, and we could have this conversation, and we have had it before. Not you and me, but plenty of people on the program. Does it just sound a bit stupid to you then for me to say the date is really important?
The date is not important. I mean, every
but it
day
is, mate.
I understand. Look, you know, dates are important. It happened on this particular day. But if you want to go down there, but every day, it's been happening in Gaza for 2 years. Every day.
And it doesn't sound to you very powerful or pertinent when I say something like, well, we can talk about that on all the other days. So you're not going to talk about it every single day, but we will return to it again and again and again and again. But today...
Because, look, every day a life is lost in Gaza. A child is dying in Gaza. Every day. Since October the 7th. I mean, I'm really, really sad that on the 7th of October, 1,200 Israelis lost their lives. So we should be, you know, equal to all deaths. We should have the same feeling towards, you know, any human dying, whichever part of the earth they're from, whichever color they are.
Of course.
Why should we have one particular day? Because,
well, because,
you know,
because the event happened, although I think your arguments might reach many people's ears as stronger than mine if we just focused on the intellectual points that you're making without any appeals to emotion in particular. And I wonder... this might sound a bit inadequate as well, but if you were just to say it doesn't matter what anybody else is doing, today we commemorate that day, what was done that day, because it is this day. That's all. I think that's the beginning and the end of my argument, is that the significance in our cultures of commemorations and anniversaries, and I don't know whether that sounds flimsy in the context of what you're describing, which we, I want to make it absolutely clear, have never shied away from. Never shied away from the horrors of what has gone on in Gaza since that date. But I don't know. How significant is the date? Arshid, thank you. Chris is in Chelmsford. Chris, what would you like to say?
James, one of the things that strikes me today is that when we normally look at commemorations, they're after the war is finished or after an event is finished.
Yes.
Right now, the genocide is still continuing. So to commemorate and add the date to what was, of course, an abhorrent act on this day 2 years ago, there were also abhorrent acts in Gaza a year ago on this day.
I can't, mate. Chris, this is such a terrible time for somebody's phone line to be dodgy, because the speed with which some people, not many, reach for the, oh, you've silenced him or it's a conspiracy theory is incredible. I think we're just going to try and improve it and get you back rather than leave ourselves exposed to accusations of silencing people. Because again, I'd say this on this programme. We do conduct these conversations with great decorum and sensitivity, but sometimes, even as you express thoughts with great decorum and sensitivity, you will cause great hurt to people. Carry on, Chris.
Okay, so...
There we go.
It's about what you often say about holding two things in your head at the same time. But right today
it's the phone line, there's nothing anyone can do about that, so I'm not going to apologise. It's coming up to 10:30. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. An awful lot of people making the point that if Israel stopped bombing Gaza, then the protest wouldn't need to take place. And I guess that's true. And I guess it will sound to many people odd to suggest that, well, just pause for one day. But I can only really share with you what's in my heart. And for now, at least, Arshid's best efforts notwithstanding, in my head. I can do both. I can do both. I can say, let's just take a pause today to reflect on the worst mass murder of Jewish people since the Holocaust and return tomorrow with them in our minds as well to the critique of what became many, many, many months ago utterly unconscionable and indefensible in Gaza. And, you know, I obsess about it a bit, but that sentence there will inflame people on both, quote, sides of this debate. Just that sentence. I say, why can't we take a day off to commemorate the worst mass murder of Jews since the Holocaust? And some people will be furious at the very suggestion because of what continues to happen in Gaza. And in the same sentence, just a comma there, not even a full stop, I say, and tomorrow we return to our critique of the unconscionable carnage in Gaza. At which point, a bunch of other people start screaming at their radios at the choice of language or the description of the genocide. In one sentence, you can alienate the most passionately involved people in this entire conversation. And I just did. That's just something to reflect on. Because if you are ever going to achieve resolution, peace, fellow feeling, I think you're going to have to start by saying things that everybody passionately invested in this horror show objects to. And then you start chipping away at the objections. And it seems to me a good place to start, even if you don't feel that your opponents are. I got 100 texts saying, are the IDF taking the day off? 100 people saying that. But if you don't start by recognizing moments, then you never stop. It's 10:31. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
The Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, has told LBC that students should think again before joining pro-Palestinian demonstrations today. She's echoed comments from Keir Starmer, who's described marches on the second anniversary of the October the 7th attacks as un-British. The Shadow Home Secretary, Chris Philp, has announced plans to triple the use of stop-and-search powers. He's also told the Conservative Party conference that a future Tory government would employ an extra 10,000 police officers. Police say they've disrupted an international gang thought to be behind 40% of phone thefts in London. Some 46 people have been arrested after officers discovered thousands of devices being shipped to China. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for many places. Patchy rain in northern areas, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC. Across the UK, people like Phil face their toughest challenges alone.
It's a pain that I feel like the body can't comprehend losing a child because you are not supposed to outlive your children.
LBC's charity, Make Some Noise, is here to support people like Phil.
It's kind of a family that you never wanted to be a part of and you would never choose to be a part of it. But now you're in it, you don't know what you'd do without.
You can change lives. Donate now at makesomenoise.com. Proudly supported by Furniture Village.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to if ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 10:34 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It would seem that Keir Starmer is at odds with a lot of opinion, and yet it feels to me, I want to get the word right, it feels to me appropriate to focus today upon what happened in Israel 2 years ago to the day, and not forget, gloss over, excuse or defend what has happened in Gaza subsequently, and crucially continues to happen in Gaza, but... Well, you know what the question is that I'm asking today. Connor is in Islington. Connor, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. Good morning. How are you?
Very well, mate. What's on your mind?
Listen, I'm a student at LSE. I'm 25. I was at the protest a few days ago at Trafalgar Square. I was talking to Eleanor a little bit about that. Mm. But I'm really in two minds as to whether to go to King's College today and go to the... I understand what you mean about not calling it a protest, because the last thing I would want to be seen doing is, you know, making October the 7th some sort of celebration. I don't really understand how the... this is an anniversary, considering... I mean, what is it an anniversary of? Are we talking about October 7th? If you're talking about the anniversary of what's been happening in Gaza and the West Bank, that's been going on a lot longer.
Yes.
You know? So I thought, I don't know, to talk through... I'm really toying with my moral compass as to what to do.
I admire you, actually, for having that sort of... It might not feel like clarity of thought, but the difference between today and the weekend is simply the calendar, right? It's just the fact that it's 2 years ago today. And this phrase, I think, is... Well, it certainly informs my position this morning that the worst mass murder of Jewish people since the Holocaust. And
of course,
you've been on these vigils and these marches, mm-hmm. so your opposition to what's going on in Gaza is absolutely unquestionable. Mm. But this is the fascinating thing, isn't it? Is it feels possible to me to do both things, to say, okay, today it's about them, and then tomorrow and the next day and the next day it's about them again. So can you give us an idea of what the gathering will be at King's College? Do you know?
I'm not 100% sure. It's not being organised. It's like a network of universities organising it. Some people might say it's Defend Our Juries, but that's unconfirmed.
Okay.
So I'm not exactly sure what the numbers are going to be. But just, if I may, on the holding two things true once, I mean, I think, in my opinion, it's okay to hold October the 7th for Jewish people and Israelis as a disgusting massacre, as it was, but also to go out today and to protest the continuing onslaught of Gazans. And of course, the date is so important. It's the date that's making me question whether to go out or not.
Mm. What do you think you're going to do? Some people will feel the exact opposite. In fact, I presume that a majority of people who are minded to go along today feel that today is exactly the right day on which to make this point because of what October the 7th set in motion, which, you know, was probably Hamas's intention.
Yeah, I mean, but it doesn't help the cause. It really, really doesn't help the pro-Palestinian cause. And when I see something at, admittedly, very, very rarely you'd see something, let me say, politely questionable at these protests, it really makes me so despondent, and I almost want to go just to make sure nothing like that.
Not to dilute the horrible stuff, because of course that gets seized upon. What sort of things are we talking about? I'm just intrigued.
It's small things. I mean, I'm quite left wing myself, and when I see people shouting Nazi and shouting fascist, and you know, the other day when there was a gentleman came to Trafalgar Square with a British flag wrapped around him, obviously he's there to cause some agitation,
yes.
But shouting fascist and racist at that, that stuff's not. It's not helpful.
No.
It's really not helpful. And when you've got the agitators coming in, I'm talking about sort of Tommy Robinson style, far-right agitators coming in, and they do eventually find people that will either slip up or have slightly dangerous views, which is not representative of the
And some people go along determined to find those views and then report on them as being entirely representative
exactly.
of everybody who's there. That's probably where Starmer's coming from, Connor, do you think? In that he is sort of allowing or maybe has no control over the volume of the voices engaging in the behaviour you describe, informing his attitude now to everybody. Because he does jump immediately from protests being un-British into people calling, in his own words, for the murder of Jewish people they have never even met, which I presume the people you sit or stand alongside would never in a million years go down a road like that.
No, of course not. I mean, I think Stormer's words today, the call for the protest not to go ahead, I understand. Mm. But the call itself and the anti-British slogan isn't really, it doesn't really carry very much weight considering its failure to be properly understood and applied when the Home Secretary used it.
Yeah, for, un-British.
It doesn't really work. It doesn't really work.
Well, the best thing you can say about it is that people like you are being told to stay at home today because of people not like you doing and saying things that almost everybody would agree are unacceptable or at the very least profoundly unpleasant. This is, as some have exercised their freedom to protest against the Israeli government's actions in Gaza, others have used this as a despicable excuse to attack British Jews for something over which they have absolutely no responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no skin in the game. So it's easy for me to say, don't let the actions of the latter category inform or influence the treatment or the freedoms of the former category. But if I was Jewish, I honestly think I would find it very, very difficult to separate you from the people calling for me to be hurt. And that's partly why today of all days, I find myself thinking, but then you've got the problem of, oh, flipping heck, Connor, I can see why you're so conflicted, because you're now thinking, if I don't go, I leave the floor free for the people who are more likely to engage in the kind
precisely.
Of conduct that Keir Starmer is describing.
Exactly. The last thing I would ever want to do is to, going on protest, you're always going to upset someone, but
yeah.
I don't want to in any way appear racist or, you know, help me, anti-Semitic. But I also I'm so animated and I'm really, really angry about what's going on in Gaza and also the West Bank, which doesn't get nearly enough attention as it does. But my generation, you know, I was speaking to a lovely new lady, Mary, who was 74 at the protest at Trafalgar Square, and I said to her, you know, my generation's a lot angrier than yours, and she says, you know, that's not true. Your generation is just better at vocalizing it, or on the flip side, cannot control its anger, and I think that's really true.
Maybe. I mean, the polling is completely at odds with the picture painted by most of the traditional or mainstream media. I think your generation has a slight head start on Mary's on much of the polling that I've seen. But thank you. And are you any clearer now on what you're going to do later today than you were when you came on the show?
I think I'm still leaning on on, still undecided, still leaning on going, just so I can prove that people like me who yeah. can hold two things true at once are able to feel the grief of Jews today and the grief of Gazans as well.
Beautifully put, Connor. Thank you, actually. It's coming up to 10:45. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I don't think there's any confusion, but I've got one text that suggests there is. These events today are not happening coincidentally on October the 7th. They are, you know, deliberately and specifically designed to unfold on this date because of the significance of this date, whether it is, for good or for ill is entirely up to you, but there's no, I don't think I needed to explain that actually. It's coming up to 10:45. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, and there it is. I kind of putting it quite perfectly. Why not today? 0345 6060 973.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
The difficulty here is that the angry white middle-aged men that Gary Neville says are dividing the nation feel divided from it already. They feel that the nation has changed in a way that you're not comfortable with. I think they're right. I think you are right to be angry.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on our free Global Player app, or the LBC app.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £14 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Whoop whoop! Thank you, far away person. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are here. 2 days of big deals on electronics, home, kitchen and more that'll make you feel less like and more like feel like a big deal. Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October, exclusively for Prime members. Shop now.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay? But I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
10:48 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I think you've probably seen Honest Bob Jenrick's latest intervention in public discourse. I don't know how relevant it is, but I'm keen to know about where he lives. I know in Herefordshire, where his home is and his constituency, the percentage of the population of Herefordshire that is black is 0.3%. And yet he has chosen to complain about not seeing many or any white faces when he found himself in Handsworth. I may do a phone-in on whether that's relevant or not. I'm trying to find the figures. I've seen one suggestion online about the figures for the village in which he actually lives, but I haven't been able to so far confirm or refute that figure. But I can tell you that for Herefordshire, at the last census, the percentage of black people in Herefordshire was less than half, one percentage point. In fact, I'm told that we have a sneak preview of Honest Bob Jenrick's speech to the Conservative Party conference that everybody else is going to have to wait until later today to hear, but we've managed to get a secret microphone into his rehearsals. Honest Bob Jenrick there, rehearsing his speech due to be delivered later in Manchester today. Let's get back to events that may happen here later today in London and elsewhere. Speak of protests, if that's the right word, held at various universities to mark the anniversary of October the 7th by focusing upon what Israel did in Gaza afterwards. Jeffrey in Barnet has helped me out in the past on questions like this and is no doubt poised to do so again. So I'll just remind people listening, Jeffrey, that you are a rabbi. What made you ring in today?
Well, I think what made me ring in initially with a lot
of... Have you got me on speaker, Jeffrey? Have you got me on speakerphone?
Yes, is that wrong?
Yes, it is categorically wrong.
Oh, dear.
That's okay, I'll wait.
Right, I'm back on ordinary.
Marvellous, thank you.
That works, does it?
Much better, yeah.
Okay, I can't hear you so well, but never mind.
Oh dear, well I'll tell you what, this is good news for everybody. I'll just be quiet for a while, Geoffrey.
Well, so much in my mind. One of the things, I might be wrong, and you'll cut me off whatever, but my memory is that Robert Jenrick was originally born Jewish.
I don't know, actually, but I've seen some people make the point this morning, including an old pal of mine, that if you're going to say things like that about Handsworth, then you'd have to say them about Stamford Hill as well, which I think is why his background might be relevant to the conversation.
I think it's relevant. I think one has to recognise the complexity of the world in which we live. So anyway, that's not the purpose of what you're wanting to talk about. It's very difficult for me to phone today in a way because it is Sukkot. That's a Jewish festival and I ought to be in synagogue, but I was in synagogue yesterday, so I don't feel quite so bad. but I do feel a bit divided, and division is what is the theme of what we're talking about. In that, in Judaism, the secular date of October the 7th is important to some, but to many also, the outrage in Gaza took place on Simchat Torah, right, which is a very central. It's called the rejoicing of the Torah, and it's a day of real celebration. And that therefore becomes a day of terrible pain. It's the day when we finish reading from Deuteronomy and start again at the beginning of Genesis. But that day is as important to us, I think, for most of us, as October the 7th. So that's one area.
Okay.
Move on. The second thing is that on Sunday, I was at a demonstration of a group called Standing Together, of Israelis and Palestinians and Jews and Muslims together at King's Cross, and there were about 200 people.
Right.
There's another one on this coming Thursday at Castle Haven in Camden Community Centre. I don't know how many people will be there. It's arranged by a group called Na'amod. And again, it's to recognise that we really need to hold and to work together, which is not a denial in any way of the horrific, terrible bombings and shootings and drones and everything that the people in Gaza have been through, nor is it a denial of the outrages of October the 7th or Simchat Torah, or however you want to put it.
So the Simchat Torah doesn't fall on the same calendar day every year, if I understood that correctly.
Yeah.
Okay. So the significance is nuanced then. But nonetheless, for those who see the number first, perhaps, and the festival second, if I can put it that way, what do you make of the suggestion from our own Prime Minister, Jeffrey, that people shouldn't actually do anything to move focus and attention to the ongoing events in Gaza?
They should stand silent.
Yes.
They should light a candle, and they should hold in their hearts all those who have been killed, all of those who've been injured, adults, elderly, children, whoever, from whatever tribe they come from, whatever name they're classified under.
And you know, and I know, that some people will not follow that course, albeit that we would both like to live in a world where everybody did. And some people turning up to some of these events will be engaging in the sort of behaviour that the Prime Minister has rightly condemned. So I wonder what you would say to Connor, who's thinking of going, but is mindful of the resonance of the date. But also, and this was the bit I found compelling in his contribution, he thinks that people like him absolutely should go because he's on the same page as you, and if he doesn't go, he leaves the stage clear for people who won't be engaging in the kind of conduct that you encourage. What would you say to him? Would you tell him to go or to stay in his rooms at college?
I say that I went to a meeting yesterday about the bombing in the Manchester Civic Centre. It was held in the Brent Civic Centre. It was extremely, it seemed to me, proper in every way. Mm. Everyone who spoke, apart from a particular rabbi who I felt made a rant, and I found myself having to walk out because he turned what was a solemn opportunity of prayer and dignity into a political speech. So Connor may leave feeling more torn apart than he goes.
Gosh. Thank you. I'm sorry. What a poignant picture you paint. And there is, of course, a lot of it about... We can't get numbers on it, can we? We'll never know how many people can simultaneously recognize the things that you've just described, and the voices of the man like you, or the woman, the voices of the rabbi that you just described are often the loudest voices, louder than yours or mine.
Yeah. They're good with rhetoric.
There's a lot of that about as well. Jeffrey, take care. Thank you for that. And don't beat yourself up for not going to synagogue. It's if you'd allow me to say that as a lifelong receptacle of Catholic guilt when it comes to attending religious ceremonies and festivals. 10:57 is the time. Adam's in Oxford. Adam, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi there, James. I think that...
I love that guy. Don't you love that guy, Adam? Jeffrey? Isn't he just wonderful? Sorry, I digress. Carry on.
No. I guess from my side of things, I guess there's two sides to this conversation, as there always is, which is, should people protest? Well, we live in a country where you have the right to protest and where, you know, sometimes expressing that right is done at a time that can be inconvenient to other people. And half the time, that's the point. You know, the way that you generate and keep momentum and conversations happening is by creating discomfort for people. You know, just stop oil. They will, you know, disrupt M25. They will do all those things. But I guess the other side of it is it comes down to a point of decency, morality. And I'm not getting into what I think is sort of morally correct or incorrect. But, you know, if Sir Keir Starmer's talking about Britishness, I think that, you know, you've
dangerous.
Got to ask yourself.
It's a dangerous road to go down, I think.
It is. And I think the challenge there is, you know, like, these are people who are turning around and saying that they are opposed to the slaughter of civilians. Is it un-British, therefore, to turn around and stand up for those individuals because the date on the calendar is inconvenient? I mean, you know, last year you had during the remembrance services, you had protests taking place that were in support of Gaza, you know, was you can sort of take any attitude towards it. You know, the whole point of protest is it's supposed to be controversial to some people, and it's supposed to generate
or it is discomforting.
Exactly.
You know, controversial is, I don't know why I'm picking you up on that. Of course it is supposed, it is bound to upset some people.
Mm-hmm.
By definition, otherwise there'd be no need to do it or no point in doing it. I don't know that I come with you completely on the sort of slippery slope theory of dates, if we can call it that. So that if we imbue October the 7th with a special sanctity, then, you know, we end up in a place where someone's coming up with a reason for every day of the year why you should never protest. It seems to me the anniversary of, and I make no apology for using this phrase repeatedly on today's programme, the worst mass murder of Jewish people since the Holocaust. The calendar commemoration of that day seems to me to deserve some sort of special treatment.
And I would agree with you. But like I said, that's coming at this from a point of what is, you know, what's the human aspect towards this. And I would totally agree with you. And that's why I wouldn't show out to such an event myself on a day like today.
But any other day you would think about it.
Any other day I would think about it. But what I would say is we have that right within this country. And so therefore, why is it that that right should only be applicable on certain days versus other ones? Whether it is, like I said, tasteful, distasteful, is a separate conversation. But as to the fact that they have chosen this specific day, you know, you're holding a phone in, not talking about the actual, the massacre itself per se, you're talking about the protest. And so therefore, you know, they've already managed to take over what would otherwise
be a day. To influence the discourse. Well, we would do both, and we will do both.
Of course, yes.
And I'll be speaking to someone in about half an hour whose parents were murdered that day. But I take your point. The Prime Minister's prompted that. More than anybody else, actually, by picking up on this line about un-Britishness and the, if you like, the postponement or the cancellation of potential events. I mean, protests conjures up images of anger, and so there will be anger, but what I learnt about the events organised by Defend Our Juries is that, albeit that the police have to respond robustly to people who refuse to go quietly, it's a deliberate tactic of getting arrested. The actual engagement is very, very peaceful. And there will be candlelit vigils tonight, I presume, for people in Israel and for people in Gaza, for people killed on October the 7th in Israel and for people killed in Gaza subsequently. And Rabbi Jeffrey reminds us that as humans, most of us have two hands, which means we could actually hold both candles. 1 minute after 11.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, indirect talks between Israel and Hamas are set to continue in Egypt on the second anniversary of the October the 7th attacks. The negotiators are discussing Donald Trump's peace plan, part of which Hamas has now accepted. The British Israeli Adam Manit lost two relatives at the hands of the terror group. He says the proposed deal is the brightest glimmer of hope they've had in a long time.
Right now, we're on the cusp of something momentous that could really shift things and bring stability to the Middle East and allow aid to flow in and bring the hostages home and, you know, pivot to new pathways for all the peoples in the region.
Political leaders in the UK have urged students to think again before joining pro-Palestinian demonstrations today. Sir Keir Starmer says it's un-British to have so little respect for the Jewish community on the October the 7th anniversary. The Shadow Home Secretary, Chris Philp, has announced plans to expand the use of stop and search under a future Tory government.
In our hotspot areas, we will allow routine stop and search without suspicion. Anyone can be searched. We'll change the law to do this, and we will triple the use of stop and search. Lives will be saved, and knives will be taken off our streets. We have the courage to do that. Labour does not.
He's also pledged to scrap non-crime hate incident in his speech to the Conservative Party conference in Manchester. Mr. Philp has described the policing of social media posts as a catastrophic waste of time that tramples on free speech. The head of the Metropolitan Police has told LBC that teenage thieves are earning £2,000 a day from stealing phones. Sir Mark Rowley was speaking after a two-week operation to dismantle a network believed to be behind 40% of phone thefts in London. 46 people have been arrested over the operation to ship devices to China. The commissioner's told us there are crazy numbers involved.
We certainly have seen some evidence of young people, people in their teens or early 20s who are drawn into criminality, sliding across from being involved in drugs to actually going out and doing phone theft instead. Because if you're stealing, say, 5 or 6 phones in a morning and you're going to get £200 to £400 for those, depending what model they are, you're making £1,000 or £2,000 a day.
Jaguar Land Rover has confirmed it will restart manufacturing operations tomorrow. Britain's largest car maker is continuing to recover from a major cyber attack at the end of August. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 9 at 94.88. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather quite cloudy but dry for many areas. Some patchy rain moving into northern England. A high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
So, we found it. Robert Jenrick, the data from the last census for the village in which he currently lives. If I were to tell you that there were only 166 residents in that part of town, or that part of the country, how many of them do you think were white at the time of the last census? So out of 166 residents in his home village in Herefordshire, what percentage of the population do you think were white at the time of the last census? So 6 minutes after 11 is the time. I ask you that question because he doesn't like going to Handsworth and seeing lots of black faces. What are we going to play out? The interview with Sky News where he sort of had a pop at a black journalist for asking him the question that obviously would occur to anybody sensible when they learn that a senior Conservative politician has complained about the colour of the skin on the faces that he saw when he found himself wandering around Birmingham, where he'd gone to film one of his dreadful anti-litter or anti-graffiti or whatever he was doing that week, little social media efforts. So what he said was, probably something I should remind you of, was it was a little bit more nuanced than perhaps some of the coverage allows. They've got hold of a recording that was made, and I mean a tiny, tiny bit more nuanced. Some of the coverage has pretended that it is clumsy I've got it here. The Shadow Justice Secretary said he didn't see another white face when he visited Handsworth in Birmingham and added, that's not the kind of country I want to live in. Now, if we leave it there, it lands very differently from how it lands when we add in, I want to live in a country where people are properly integrated. It's not about the colour of your skin or your faith. Of course it isn't, but I want people to be living alongside each other, not parallel lives. That's not the right way we want to live as a country. That's at the same dinner. That's not part of his subsequent attempts to justify what he said. It's not a retrospective backtracking. It puts a slightly different complexion, if you'd pardon the pun, on the rather bold and bald statement. I didn't see another white face. I don't, that's not the kind of country that I want to live in. But the thing about white privilege, which was not something I understood or even knew to be a phrase until relatively recently, and for that, you know, for good or for ill, is that you don't know what the world looks like through other people's eyes. So for a white man to complain about there being effectively too many black faces in Birmingham, when he lives in a village where out of 166 residents at the time of the last census, 165, I kid you not, were white, just needs to be a little bit further examined, doesn't it? If you really believe in integration and you really want people to be living alongside each other in harmony, how did you end up living in a place where 165 out of 166 of your neighbours are the same colour as you? I wonder. What coincidence? Also, you only have to go back to 1964, which I grant you is quite a long time ago, it's more years than I've been alive, to find a predecessor of Robert Jenrick, another Conservative politician, telling voters in Smethwick, which is another suburb of Birmingham, that if they wanted a N-word for a neighbour, they should vote Labour. So a lot of families would have made the decision about where they wanted to live in the aftermath of those comments and in the climate created, or the climate being reflected by the then Conservative MP. He won the by-election, by the way, after putting up posters saying, vote Labour if you want a N-word for a neighbour. And if you were growing up in that climate, if perhaps you'd come over as part of Windrush to help rebuild this country after the Second World War and found yourself enduring that sort of Enoch Powell type of rhetoric, where would you choose to live? I wonder. Where would you choose to live? Next door to the people who voted Conservative because they didn't want a black neighbour? Or next door to people who looked a little bit more like you? But that was 1964. It would be nice to think that things had changed. But sadly, as we've been discovering in recent weeks, they haven't really. They just got dialed down, I think, and correctly categorised as racist. But we now live in a country where describing and condemning racism is a more controversial act than being racist. It was Gary Neville's turn to discover that yesterday, of course. And then Robert Jenrick turned up for an interview on Sky News with the journalist Kamali Melbourne, who is, and I think it's pertinent, who is black. So he has the sort of face that Robert Jenrick was very cross or very sad to see dominating the population when he found himself wandering around Handsworth. This, of course, a man who lives in a part of Herefordshire where 165 out of 166 of his neighbours are all white. And I think, understandably, Kamali Melbourne picked him up on it.
I do wonder what integrated means for you. And I wonder how you can judge that a person is integrated by the colour of their skin being there for 90 minutes.
Well, look, I was very clear that it's not about the colour of your skin or the faith.
You didn't see any white faces, and that's what made you feel like it wasn't integrated.
The point that I was making is we want all people to be living side by side. We can't have particular communities in this country where there's a heavy preponderance of one group or another. We want people to be living in mixed communities, don't we? I mean, I don't know about you, but that's what I want to 100%. See in this country. That's okay. The kind of country I want my kids to be growing up in.
Robert,
you know, there's huge strengths in that. But we mustn't
have growing
communities where people are living essentially ghettoised lives.
Okay.
That is a bad place for our country to be in.
It is. And Robert Jenrick, you know that kind of language, I mean, you said you're putting your head above the parapet, but you'll know that kind of language does give support for groups on the far right that don't want to see brown and black people living in this country.
Not.
You know that, don't you?
I think that's an absolutely disgraceful and ridiculous comment. I tell you what gives rise to extremist views. With all due respect, it's journalists like yourself trying to shut down.
What did I do wrong?
Legitimate,
I'm not shutting you down,
Rob,
but we've been talking
debate.
About it for at least 5
it
minutes.
It is, because what you are implying is that you can't say comments like that. And if we live in a country where politicians or members of the public cannot debate whether there is due integration or not, then that does give fuel for extremists. That does give rise to the far right. So you must not take fair and reasonable comments and try and use them to shut down a debate that this country needs to have. we have been having this debate off and on for decades, and every time people try and raise these issues in a fair and reasonable way, with all due respect, journalists like you pop up and try and knock those people down. And that is the reason why
it's not my,
we don't
it's
live
not,
in an integrated
it's not my
country.
Opinion necessarily,
that is the reason
is it? I mean,
why,
Robert, because it's
the
also
reason why
the mayor
terrorist
of,
attacks
of the West Midlands said, Andy
because
Street,
people are
wrong.
Not stepping up and taking the action that's needed.
Andy Street said that you were wrong as well, but we can move on from that.
I'm not sure I would have done. But then again, that's probably why I've never had Robert Jenrick sitting opposite me in this studio. Is he the one? Did he mention me on... Why would you care about this? I think he mentioned me on stage at the last Conservative conference. I hope I get a shout-out today. In fact, we've got a sneak preview of his speech that he's due to be giving to the Conservative Party conference later today. If you weren't listening earlier, you may have missed it. We managed to, in the same way that there was, this was a recording made when he was at a dinner a few months ago, when he talked about how unhappy he was when he walked around Handsworth and everyone was black. Here's a little sneak preview that we've managed to sneak into his rehearsals with a hidden microphone. So this is a little flavour of the speech that Robert Jenrick will be giving later today. Because you're a human, you can't hear the whistle. I'm also learning that Kemi Badenoch has described there being a big buzz in Birmingham. So I've charged my top operators. I hear that we have actually got some proof that there is a buzz. Kemi Badenoch says there's a buzz at the Conservative Party conference. It's in Manchester, isn't it? Sorry, not in, but where is it actually? It's in Manchester. So we found the buzz. That's the buzz that the leader of the Conservative Party, Kemi Badenoch, was describing, having encountered at the Conservative Party conference in Manchester earlier today. Okay, this is no laughing matter. I think it's very significant that Robert Jenrick lives in a village where 65 out of 66 of his neighbours are white, and yet claims that a black journalist asking him to account for his misgivings and negative feelings when he found himself in a community that was predominantly black is a sign of something being wrong with our country. And indeed, did he bring, let's listen to it again. I'm sorry to inflict it on you twice, but I got a bit distracted by the buzz in the conference hall. Why did he bring terrorism into it? Did he bring, just listen again to this.
I do wonder what integrated means for you. And I wonder how you can judge that a person is integrated by the colour of their skin being there for 90 minutes.
Well, look, I was very clear that it's not about the colour of your skin or the faith.
You didn't see any white faces, and that's what made you feel like it wasn't integrated.
The point that I was making is we want all people to be living side by side. We can't have particular communities in this country where there's a heavy preponderance of one group or another. We want people to be living in mixed communities, don't we? I mean, I don't know about you, but that's what I want to
100%.
See in this country. That's
okay.
The kind of country I want my kids to be growing up in.
Robert,
you know, there's huge strengths in that. But we mustn't
have growing communities
where people are living essentially ghettoized lives.
Okay.
That is a bad place for our country to be in.
It is. Robert Jenrick, you know that kind of language, I mean, you said you putting your head above the parapet, but you'll know that kind of language does give support for groups on the far right that don't want to see brown and black people living in this country.
Not.
You know that, don't you?
I think that's an absolutely disgraceful and ridiculous comment. I tell you what gives rise to extremist views. With all due respect, it's journalists like yourself trying to shut down.
What did I do wrong?
Legitimate,
I'm not shutting you down, Rob, but we've been talking
debate.
About it for at least 5 minutes.
It is, because what you are implying is that you can't say comments like that. And if we live in a country where politicians or members of the public cannot debate whether there is due integration or not, then that does give fuel for extremists. That does give rise to the far right. So you must not take fair and reasonable comments and try and use them to shut down a debate that this country needs to have. We have been having this debate off and on for decades, and every time people try and raise these issues in a fair and reasonable way, with all due respect, journalists like you pop up and try and knock those people down. And that is the reason why
we don't live in an integrated country. It's not my opinion necessarily, Robert, because it's also why the mayor of the West Midlands said Andy Street, because people are not stepping up and taking the action that's needed. Andy Street said that you're wrong as well, but we can move on from that.
We'll have a listen to Andy Street's comments as well. So, I didn't see another white face. That's not the kind of country I want to live in, says a man who bought a manor house in a village where 165 of his 166 neighbours are white. I think that's actually quite relevant to the broader picture, but I don't know for sure. It doesn't speak of somebody who wants to live in a multicoloured community, does it? If you have chosen to live in one where there is literally one black face in the immediate environs, an extraordinary statistic that you can find on the census data, the most recently available census data, and which I stumbled across on Blue Sky, the social media platform, earlier today. A former colleague of mine writes, I don't think Robert Jenrick realises that the people clapping along to him when he talks about Handsworth would clap along if he said the same thing about Stamford Hill, which is a predominantly Jewish community. I'd hope that would give him pause for thought. I agree with that. And yet also the very ugly nature of his exchange with that journalist of colour, accusing him of somehow fomenting the kind of behaviour that leads to terrorism. Look, honest Bob Jenrick is not the sharpest knife in the drawer. But that is an intervention of such extraordinary stupidity that I'm almost thinking there must be more to it than I've currently been able to calculate. On what possible planet does asking somebody why they're discomforted by the colour of people's skin in a town they neither inhabit nor visit very often, or a part of a town that they neither inhabit nor visit very often, what on earth links journalists asking him to clarify his thoughts with incitement to actual terrorism? I mean, truly, we are in absolutely bonkers times. And bonkers isn't actually the right word to use, because they're ugly, they're horrible, and they're frightening. And some of us will go to our graves pushing against these waves, and some people will surf them. Some people would surf them. 0345-6060-973 is the number you need to tell me what you think Robert Jenrick was saying. What was he saying? What did you hear between the lines that contain the words, I went to Handsworth and I didn't see another white face, that's not the kind of country I want to live in. Brackets, I bought a manor house in a village where 165 of my 166 neighbours are white.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the LBC app.
We had our smart meter installed a year ago, and it's made things so much easier. Not having to submit meter readings or having to deal with estimated bills is great.
A smart meter sends meter readings direct to your energy supplier. It means you get accurate bills, not estimated bills, and you don't even need an internet connection. Call your energy supplier to request a smart meter today.
Real testimonials voiced by actors. Eligibility may vary.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £14 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Whoop whoop! Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
22 minutes after 11. And I'm going to play out that little clip of Andy Street, the former mayor of Birmingham. And I've also got some extraordinary new developments on this story. A James O'Brien LBC exclusive. Actually, it's another colleague of mine called James who spotted it. But do you know why honest Bob Jenrick was in Handsworth? He was in Handsworth to do vox pops on litter. And the results of that visit were broadcast on, a kind of television station. So what would you expect that report from a place where he didn't see any white faces to look like? So Robert Jenrick goes to Handsworth. Sounds like the beginning of the worst children's story ever, doesn't it? Or the worst nursery rhyme in history. Honest Bob goes to Handsworth, doesn't see another white face, complains about it to a friendly crowd at a Conservative Party event later that evening. And he made a video on that visit to Handsworth when he didn't see any other white faces. Wouldn't it be interesting to watch that video, even if it meant putting a penny in the slot for a sort of comedy television station? What would be the most embarrassing thing that video could contain for Honest Bob? I mean, were he embarrassable? Were the bloke complaining about there not being any white faces in Handsworth while living in a village where there are 165 white people and one black person? Not just living there, he bought the bloody manor house. What would be the most embarrassing thing that could emerge in that video that he was making on a trip in which he complained about not seeing any white faces? Can you think what it might be? The worst? I think you're going to beat me to it, aren't you? Let's get the phone in up and running. What did you hear in Robert Jenrick's words? And can somebody claim that they are in favour of integration, but only where other people live? Jack's in Handsworth. Jack, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. Long time call. I'm actually your age. So I love hearing what you say.
Thank you.
I've grown up in Handsworth, and sort of I'm, as I said, 50 odd years old. I still live a mile away. And I'm sort of beside myself with anger with what he's trying to do and trying to use Handsworth as a scapegoat to try and sort of dog whistle to try and eat Reform's dinner. That there's nothing genuine about what he's trying to say. All he's trying to use is our community, and it's a very, very integrated community. I think there's something.
What does he mean by? I mean, how does your colour determine your level of integration in society? Is Sadiq Khan integrated into British society, having been elected mayor of the capital city three times on the trot, or is he not sufficiently integrated because he's married to someone of a similar ethnic? I don't know what he means. Do you know exactly what he means?
I know what he's trying to say. What he's trying to say is basically is that these are black and brown ghettos, and they don't wave the flags. And while I was there, I felt uncomfortable. That's all he's really trying to say.
But if it's one of the worst integrated places he's ever been, and he lives in a place where 165 out of 166 of the residents are white, he must mean even more than that, mustn't he?
But the last census shows that Birmingham had, or sorry, Handsworth had 20% white residents. So we are within the sort of the catchment area for West Bromwich Albion. We're about a mile away from the Villa. We get a lot of sort of parking for West Bromwich. Sort of on match days, we get absolutely so tens of thousands of white people here. Right? Maybe he just came on the wrong day.
That to me doesn't matter. I understand why you're cross about his attempt to portray your community as being some. You never hear about
massively integrated.
Well, yes,
of course, there's people of all kinds of races, colours, creeds, religions. We all live side by side. There's absolutely nothing wrong with Handsworth as an area. We can't help the fact that some people feel uncomfortable. That's their feeling, not ours. I've grown up as a brown person in a white country. I've felt uncomfortable in certain places, but you just get on with it. That's fine. It's okay. It's not my issue that he feels uncomfortable. If he feels uncomfortable, perhaps he needs to look inside himself and see why that is.
He feels uncomfortable around black people.
Yeah, if that's his case.
Unless he's in the massive majority, which is so unintegrated, because for people of colour, imagine what life is like for that one black bloke in the Herefordshire village where Robert Jenrick lives. If Jenrick's going to feel discomforted in Handsworth, how on earth is that lad going to feel in Eye, as the village is
known? We're used to it.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? And that's why I mentioned white privilege at the top of the hour, because I'm not used to it. I don't know what it feels like. Thank you, Jack. And for the record, find me a street or a suburb where there is a census breakdown that shows more people who are my colour live, or more people who are Jack's colour live, or more people who are Kemi Badenoch's colour live, and it tells me nothing. It tells me nothing about the people who live there. Nothing at all. It tells me nothing about their decency, their kindness, their intelligence, their honesty, their patriotism, their community spirit. It tells me nothing. It's weird, right? Because it tells him something. What? What does it tell him? Simon's in Gloucester. Simon, what would you like to say?
Hi, how are you? Simon.
Very well, mate. What's on your mind?
I'm just listening to these words. I've been listening them for months now, and I'm getting a bit tired of the description of people, and I'm tired of people being described like colouring pens.
Mm.
My children are mixed race, and to describe my daughter as just black, she's not. She's British. Yeah, she's British by me being involved in that. She might be mixed race. Being what a colour doesn't make you from anywhere. Being where you grow up is where you are from. That's culture. I'm tired of the description of people. I'm tired. Does my daughter, if somebody in power starts describing people by colours, we are creating more of a problem than we're solving, because we're not encouraging integration. Everything that's said at the moment is about race, is about this, is about that, because we believe we can win more votes by describing people. I've never known this country to be more racist than it is now. Never. I grew up in the 80s and I went to a school. My school had everybody from every culture, from black and white. Who cared? Nobody cared. I played with whoever and mucked about with whoever. Race is culture, where you're from. A person from Ghana isn't the same as somebody from Nigeria. They're different cultures, and they're different people with different opinions. I'm tired of the description of people. Race is a concept that is created by government. It is a concept that's created. The colour of your skin makes no difference. One has more vitamin D and one has less. It's as simple as that. Yes, there are people that aren't going to mix. Yes, there are people that are problematic. But that's separate to those. I teach training and I talk to people and I say, I will base you on the content of your character, not the content on your, not the colour of your skin. It's insane. If somebody in power keeps saying these things, then what are we becoming?
Well, we're becoming the most racist country that any of us can remember living in. And that's I'm speaking as a white man. Goodness knows what it's like speaking from the other side of the road.
What do you think he is saying here?
What do you think? Because, I mean, listen, I don't want to say to be fair, but it's not as bald as the first paragraph suggests. I went to Handsworth, I didn't see another white face. That's not the kind of country I want to live in. And then he talks about wanting to live in a more integrated place. I don't quite see how he can say, I didn't see another white face, and in the same breath say, it's not about the colour of your skin or your faith. What do you think he's actually saying here?
I don't think he's saying anything. I think it's the same as everybody else at the moment. They're all trying to win votes. And at the moment, the way to win votes is to separate people by the colour of their skin. I think they're all doing it. All the politicians are doing it. They're all doing that because they're all jumping on the bandwagon. None of them, there isn't a single politician that's coming in. They're all career politicians. There's nobody doing anything for the right thing. I'm going to go to Nigeria. I'm looking at buying a house. This country carries on going the way it's going. I'm leaving. I will be gone. To protect my daughter, to protect myself. It may be corrupt, but I tell you what, at least it's honest corruption. It's obvious.
Okay, I mean, you could say that. I mean, honestly, I'm on tenterhooks with every phone in that we have at the moment. And of course, there'll be plenty of Nigerian people who are unhappy with the way that you've characterised their country, but you're talking about administrations rather than individuals. I have Nigerian family as well, actually. It's not a country I've ever been able to visit because of the situation there militarily when we were of an age that we were visiting each other's families. But I hear you. I hate these calls. I'm getting more and more of them, Simon. I hate them, and it's worthless, me saying that. It's pointless, meaningless. I just want you to know I hate them. I hate what you're going through. I hate what you're feeling. I hate what they are doing. And I'm pretty confident today that Robert Jenrick is part of the problem that is prompting Simon to consider quitting these shores in order to ensure that his daughter doesn't have to live in a country where senior politicians complain about not seeing another white face while visiting an area of Birmingham before going home to their manor house in a village where 165 of his 166 neighbours are the same colour as him. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
Memorial events are taking place in Israel to mark the second anniversary of the October the 7th attacks. Sir Keir Starmer has urged students not to take part in pro-Palestinian demonstrations planned at some British universities later. The Shadow Home Secretary has announced plans to expand the use of stop and search under a future Tory government. Chris Philp has also pledged to scrap non-crime hate incidents in his speech to the Conservative Party conference. Police say they've disrupted a gang believed to be behind 40% of phone thefts in London. It's suspected of smuggling up to 40,000 stolen devices from the UK to China over the past 12 months. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for many areas, some rain moving into northern England, a high of 18 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep. Where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters. On your doorstep. Based on 2024 UK and EU Amazon packaging data.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Business healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
36 minutes after 11. It's a very poignant day for obvious reasons, particularly for my next guest. But we just had a moment in the studio of frankly quite absurd coincidence, because I'm joined today by a man whose brother was in the studio with us this time last year. It is October the 7th. Margan Inon is with me today. Last year, his brother Mowers was here to reflect upon the loss of his parents that day, the murder of his parents that day in 2023, and the work that they've done subsequently. But just as we were preparing to come on air, Margan looked up and saw his brother on Sky News. It's extraordinary. What a moment. I just thought people might enjoy that sort of serendipity. But you're here for anything but happy reasons. You lost both your parents on October the 7th in 2023. They were working on a small holding, their home in Israel, when the house was hit by a close-range missile.
We're not sure about the details. Not sure where you want to go into that. But
I don't need to.
Yeah, basically, the village where they lived was attacked by Hamas terrorists, and 20 members of the community were murdered that day.
When did you find out, and how did you find out?
So I've been living in London for the last 10 years. I woke up, you know, there's a 2 hours gap between the UK and Israel. It was a Saturday morning, and woke up early. I have young kids, and they wake me up at 5 or 6 a.m. And when they woke me up, I looked at the WhatsApp, and the family WhatsApp was and there were a lot of messages there, and including my brother sending a message to my parents if they're okay, that they can hear some stuff on the news. And then my dad sent a message saying that they can hear some gunshots and artillery fire, and they've locked the house and they're in their safe room. And that was sadly the last message we ever got from them.
I'm so sorry. What is remarkable, to me at least, about you and your family, your siblings, is that in that loss, after that loss of Bilha and Yaakovi, your mother and father, you determined that the best way to honour their memory was to reflect that the way that they had raised you, and you said in an interview last year that they raised you in a house that was always open to everyone. It didn't matter their group identity, their religion, their mother tongue. It was natural for us. And you worried in the immediate aftermath of that terror attack that some people were, and I quote you again, trying to hijack our pain in order to call for revenge and call for continuous violence.
I'm so sad I was right.
Well, I was wondering how to phrase that question, actually. Yeah. Precisely that question, Margaret, because I was going to say, how does it feel to have been proved right in such a
circumstances? It feels terrible. You know what? I don't care about being on the right side of history. I care about changing the course of it. And I think this is how me and my siblings have reacted to our personal tragedy. We try to do everything we can so other people on both sides of the border don't suffer the same fate.
And you work with people who've lost family members in attacks on Gaza subsequently,
yes,
as well. Why do you think we do our best, but the discourse is it's dominated by people who perhaps are closer to the category you described last year as wanting to use your pain in order to call for continuous violence. Why do you think you and your brother and others find it harder than some to get into the conversation, to get into the discussions?
Some of it is on you, the media.
Yes.
I think, sending a message of peace and reconciliation and recognizing each other's pain might not gain as many listeners as arguments and debates where everybody's trying to win,
My favorite caller today, and the one that got the biggest response, was a rabbi, Jeffrey, who would be absolutely on the same page as you with this. So they're probably wrong sometimes in the media to think that the heat is going to be the most popular way of
discussing. Yeah, I completely agree. But I think with the rise of social media and what is happening there, and I think other media following suit sometimes, not always, and politicians realizing that this is where their voters are getting their information from. So I think that's one aspect.
Give us an idea of the kind of work that you're doing, the kind of activism that you're engaged in.
So the last 2 years I've been involved with a few organizations. One, it's called Yachad, which is a British Jewish organization that's trying to promote diplomatic solution to the conflict, mainly within the Jewish community. So raising a voice in the Jewish community to promote that. I've been working with an organization called Solutions Not Sides that brings an Israeli and a Palestinian peacemaker into high schools here. And we tried to find an organization that would help us set up something on university campuses. Mm. And because we couldn't find an organization, we started...
A bridge. You couldn't find a bridge.
We couldn't find something like an infrastructure.
Yeah.
So we started doing it ourselves. And this is... we have quite a busy plan for this year.
What have you called that organization?
So sometimes some of it we've done with Together, Together Coalition. Brendan Cox became a friend and a mentor. But some of it we don't have a name yet. We're open to, but the title
we don't say that people will start texting me.
Yeah, but the title we're giving our work there is that peace is possible. And we're trying to move the conversation in a more helpful direction.
I don't know if anyone can read the runes of anything that has Donald Trump's fingerprints on it. But do you have hope, optimism about the latest nudges towards a resolution?
Hope, always.
Yes.
You know, we keep saying hope is an action. We don't sit around and wait for hope to come from external sources. We act, and through our actions, we find hope. And one of the things that was very powerful to me and my siblings is when we decided to come out with a message that our family is against revenge, that that's not the legacy of our parents, almost immediately we had Palestinian, now friends, reach out to us and say, we're with you. We share your pain. Let's work together. And that has been not one or two. It's been many. And I think that's the by us raising our voice, we were contacted, and that's creating hope with our actions.
What did they do, your mum and dad? What was it about the way that they raised you that meant all four
of them? How much time do you have?
it is limited, but I'm happy to be late for the next break.
So my dad was an agronomist. That means he would consult big farmers what to do with their land. And we grew up on the tractor in the fields. And he was, although he was after retirement age, still was very highly appreciated. And his advice was sought after by many. So he kept working. And my mom was an artist and an art teacher, especially working with young kids. She was the most amazing grandmother someone can hope for. We would come home and she would just take the kids and do this amazing artwork with them. They're sadly missed.
Of course. And what was the teaching, as it were? What was it that made them pass on to you such an extraordinary capacity for compassion and fellow feeling?
I think, just to simplify it, yeah. I think it's heart and a very pragmatic attitude.
Ah.
So both of these things. So my dad, you know, if you're a farmer or like he was helping farmers, let's say there's a drought or a field is burned. Like, it doesn't make sense to be angry.
Or to burn it more.
It doesn't make sense.
That's beautiful.
So what do you do? You need to plow the field. You need to sow the seeds. You need to, cultivate it. And then you do everything you can. You try and do it right. And then you hope for rain. Because in Israel and Palestine, rain is not a given like here. And so you always, but if you didn't have hope, you wouldn't start the process. So I think this attitude of being hopeful, but putting it into action and doing everything right. And even if you do everything right, you're not guaranteed to succeed, but you give yourself the best chance.
Has it got harder to hold on to that hope over the course of the last 2 years? Or has it actually, because it's become more important the further away it feels, has it actually galvanized you?
I think, I think what has changed is that it became more, I would say, sustainable. Yeah. So at first we thought if we just say this and if we just do that, you know, things will change. And I think now we realize, no, we need to set it up so that it's sustainable. We can do it day in, day out. The entire family, each one, we're different. So each one is taking a slightly different course, but we share the same values and we feel like, we're a family now in crisis mode. So when you're in crisis mode, you stop arguing about silly stuff and you ask yourself, how can I help my brother, my sisters, so that we, as a family, thrive and also change the world to the direction that we want. And I wish that kind of, you know, family in crisis attitude would be more of the national conversation.
Or the international conversation.
And the international conversation. So we stop arguing about the silly stuff And there's a lot of people who are trying to pull us in those directions.
There are.
And I would say just we need to quiet those voices, and the adults in the room need to work together to move us in the right direction.
Can I apologize in advance for stealing your analogy about the plowed field? Because I will be I will be using
it. Go for that. It's I think we've used it. The family have used it. I'm not sure who was the first to come up with it.
It's quite beautiful.
Thank you very much.
As is the work that you do and the inspiration that you provide for many, many people in Israel, Palestine, and Gaza and beyond. Magen Inon, thank you.
Thank you. Can I just in a sentence, I want to share the you know, my heartfelt sympathies with all those people who lost their lives in the war on October 7th and since in the terrorist attack here in the UK recently. My heart is with all of those people, and I give them a big hug, and I ask them to for all of us to work together so that our kids don't suffer the same fate as my parents.
I've got nothing to add to that.
LBC, this morning on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
The Prime Minister and others suggesting this day of protest should not proceed. Have the pleasure and privilege going to Manchester now to bring into the conversation the leader of the Conservative Party at her conference, of course, Kemi Badenoch. Your message to people who are planning pro-Palestinian demonstrations at university campuses.
You are doing the wrong thing. Today is the anniversary of one of the worst massacres we have seen in our lifetimes. Babies were killed. Women were raped. This does not help Palestinians. This is creating a climate of fear and intimidation.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the LBC app.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay? But I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
Arenas full of fans. Stars taking it to another level. The excitement, the glory, the action. And you could be behind it all. Kickstart your career in esports with Global Academy's new esports production sixth form course. Get the skills and knowledge to join a fast-growing media industry. And you could even join Global Academy's own esports team. Thinking what next after GCSEs? Then find out more about the esports production sixth form course at globalacademy.com.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of. Where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts. And where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters. On your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
Can your phone drown out irritating noises in your videos? Can anybody hear me over this? Luckily, Audio Eraser on the Galaxy S25 Ultra gets rid of background noises in seconds. Can your phone do that? Galaxy can. Get 15% off Galaxy S25 Ultra with code S15.
Buy from Samsung.com by the 21st of October 2025. Use code at checkout. Voucher code can't be combined with any other offer. Samsung account login and network connection required.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC with James O'Brien. Text 84850.
11:52 is the time. What an extraordinary chap and an extraordinary family. And I think you'd agree that just the voice we wanted to hear on a day like today. And I will be sharing more of the work that Magen and his family do and his colleagues, including, of course, Palestinian colleagues working with him on precisely the sort of projects that he described to you. We return, because we kind of have to Robert Jenrick, the Shadow Justice Secretary, revealing to a gathering of Conservatives in Birmingham that he visited part of their city and didn't see another white face. And this exercised him enormously. Andy Street, the former mayor of that city, which is not my hometown, it was the big city nearby when I was growing up. It was the place we used to go to the cinema and things like that. But I've got a fondness for Birmingham, as many people raised in Kidderminster would have. Andy Street was, until relatively recently, the Conservative mayor of Birmingham, so arguably knows it a little bit better than Robert Jenrick does.
Good evening, Victoria. And yes, I was indeed mayor for 7 years, and I was very proud to be mayor of the most diverse place in Britain, a Conservative mayor with that background. Putting it bluntly, Robert's wrong. It's a place I know very well, Handsworth. It's come a hell of a long way in the 40 years since the last civil disturbances there, and it's actually a very integrated place. If you go along the main streets there, you will see Sikhs, Hindus, Muslims, Christians, a lot of them of African and Caribbean extract, and of course, or origin, and of course, white people as well. It is actually one of the most successfully integrated places. Brilliant civic society, brilliant faith leadership.
He also said it, some of the worst slums he'd ever seen. What do you make of that?
I think he was trying to make a point, which I don't agree with. If you go to the schools in Handsworth, I've been to a number recently, you see incredible hope, optimism, and people taking part in education, which is based around British values and thinking about how they can make a contribution to the future of their region, their city, and their area. That is not a definition of a slum.
11:54 is the time. So what was Robert Jenrick actually saying? A man who lives in a village where 165 of the 166 residents are white, arrived in Handsworth and complained about the number of people he saw who were not. I wonder how it reaches you. Listen, I got a couple of texts defending it, but remember, I've got a history button. So I can see what you've sent to other presenters, and I can see what you've sent to this radio station in the past. So if you're trying to defend it, and then 2 days ago you were describing London as a cesspit that's full of Islamics, then obviously I can't necessarily take your contribution today in good faith. But if you're not a massive racist, and you do think that you can account for Robert Jenrick's words in a way that doesn't sound like massive racism, then you're particularly welcome on the programme today. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you will need. I'm glancing at the clock because we spent quite a lot of time with Megan, so I should just crack on. Joe's in Walsall, which is just up the road, a bit more gentrified these days. Joe, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. So I grew up in Handsworth, and I agree with Andy Street, what he's saying there. Yeah. It's very highly integrated.
I promise I'm jumping in. I know it's really annoying, but I just want you to tell me what you think Robert Jenrick means when he uses the word integrated, because he doesn't mean what you mean or what I mean or what Andy Street means.
Well, I think there's like a couple of things to talk about here. I think he's sort of exposing his own sort of prejudice. Mm. And his dislike of seeing non-white faces. He's making sort of assumptions before he's even interacted with them. And the second thing is that I think he's trying to appeal to people that are more like that, that are being more vocal, raising the flags, that sort of veering towards reform and away from the Conservatives. And I think that's what he's basically a sort of like a dog whistle to say, I'm on your side, come and support me. The Conservatives are just like you as well. The bit about sort of like the integration is that, you know, the Conservatives cut the English-speaking lessons for migrants by 66%. And now that they turn around and say that people aren't speaking the language, it's all of this, all this rhetoric that's coming from Reform and Conservatives is a deflection. It's to point the finger at migrants, black and brown people, if anyone foreign that's in the country, because migration numbers have gone up. So they can say, look, the reason why everything's rubbish in this country is because of the migrants. It's because of black and brown people.
We need to point out the conflation there, because you're right, that's what they're doing. But actually, it moved incredibly quickly from, if you like, recent arrivals, where feelings have been stirred up very deliberately and very violently, particularly since Keir Starmer won an election, because the right-wing media couldn't really go all in on it while the people that they'd put in Downing Street were still in charge. But the speed with which it's moved, because Robert Jenrick isn't talking about recent arrivals. He'd be talking about families that have been in Handsworth since they were putting up those, if you want an N-word for a neighbour, vote Labour posters up the road in Smethwick 60 years ago.
Yeah, I agree completely. It's an old playbook rule where, you know, prior to the stop the boats, it was the EU. The EU's the reason why everything's bad in this country. And then now we've left the EU, they've got to go back to the pointing the finger at the others. So it's you're right, it started with stop the boats and it's crept in now. And now it's sort of,
it's fair game to just say these things. Too many, he's saying there's too many black people in Handsworth.
That's what he's saying, but it's not a case of if you've got black faces or white faces. It's about the behaviour of the people.
Of course,
it's about and that comes from having a respect for your country. And if you've got a government that's cutting council budgets, that's not spending the money, you can't have a good country on the cheap. You can't do it. And we've had 15 years of tightening our belt straps and, you know, trying to balance the books. And really, it's just a deterioration of the country. What we need is public investment, governments to say, you know what, we're going to invest in our society, invest in our local communities, and spend more on people, on cohesion, on all sorts of public good. But they're just not doing it. And is it on purpose? Is it a deliberate thing?
Not from the current government. I mean, they would probably argue that they've got very little fiscal freedom to do anything different about it. That may change under the new budget. But the thing we keep coming back to, and I didn't know that we'd come back to it today, Joe, is this absolute madness that is so transparent and so easy to see once it's been pointed out to you, that the people who have won everything since 2010, every election until last year, they got the referendum, they even got Boris Johnson into Downing Street, Liz Truss got her hands on the Treasury and the budget, they got every single thing they'd ever dreamt of, politically, electorally, and look what happened. So what on earth else can they do now, except try and blame it on the fact that there are too many black people in Handsworth?
Well, yeah, exactly. And I think what's going to happen is, nothing I've ever voted for has ever won, basically.
Who's going to win the 4 o'clock at Haydock?
Maybe. But I think what's going to happen is, it looks likely, if you're a betting man, it looks likely that Reform are going to win the next election. And I think the losers are going to win, essentially. We're going to lose. Like, whoever's picked the winners recently, we've all ended up losing. And I fear that that's going to happen again until people actually start looking at solutions. And I'm a Green voter. I'm a Green supporter. If people start looking at the Green Party more, we could actually build up this country to something great.
Imagine if the Green Party, which has a comparable number of MPs, got the same amount of media attention as Reform UK and had done, let's say, for the last 10 or 20 years. It would be a very different political landscape indeed. Before you go, I've got a little game to play. So, Honest Bob was in Birmingham to film a video about litter or about rubbish during the Birmingham bin strike, I presume. So it's not exactly indicative of the status quo. It's indicative of what happens when the bin men are on strike. And he complained, as you know, to a Conservative Party gathering that he hadn't seen any white faces when he was in Handsworth. The film he made of this visit for GBBS, Joe.
Yeah.
How many black faces do you think appeared in the film that he made while visiting, on a visit during which he complained about not seeing any white people? How many black faces do you think appear in his film for GBBS?
I have no idea. I'm just going to guess zero.
You see? You don't get everything wrong.
Do I get a prize?
There you go. Yeah, you do. You get the free news headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, memorial events are taking place in Israel to mark the second anniversary of the October the 7th attacks. Here, Sir Keir Starmer has urged students not to take part in pro-Palestinian protests planned at some British universities. The Prime Minister says it's un-British to have so little respect for the Jewish community. The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has told LBC that any marches today are wrong.
Today is the anniversary of one of the worst massacres we have seen in our lifetimes. Babies were killed. Women were raped. Young people at a music festival were slaughtered. This does not help Palestinians. This is creating a climate of fear and intimidation for Jews just a few days after we saw two Jewish people slaughtered by anti-Semitic hate.
Robert Jenrick has insisted it is not all doom and gloom for the Conservative Party. The Shadow Justice Secretary is delivering his speech to the Tory conference in Manchester after another round of reform defections. 20 councillors have walked away to join Nigel Farage's party. The family of Stephen Lawrence have urged the parole board not to release one of his killers. Victim impact statements say David Norris should not walk free without revealing what happened on the night of his murder in 1993. Norris, who is 49, was jailed for a minimum of 14 years and 3 months in January 2012. Police have disrupted an international gang thought to be behind 40% of phone thefts in London. 46 people have been arrested after officers discovered thousands of devices being shipped to China. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight has more.
This early morning raid was one of dozens carried out at the same time in London as the Met worked to dismantle a prolific gang making millions off stolen phones. The 10-month investigation was the biggest linked to phone snatching ever carried out in the UK. Among those detained were two Afghan nationals who were suspected of sending 40,000 devices to China last year. And there were several thieves and robbers thought to have been snatching up to 10 phones a day.
The chemicals giant INEOS is to cut a fifth of jobs at its plant in Hull. The firm's blamed the 60 redundancies on high energy costs and cheap imports from China. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 9 points at 94.88. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, cloudy but dry for many areas. Some patchy rain moving into northern England, a high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Five minutes after 12 is the time. I'm going to stay with the Robert Jenrick story, actually, because I think he's a particularly hideous contributor to public discourse, or rather his contributions to public discourse are particularly hideous. The first time you heard of him was probably over that property sort of business that he conducted with Richard Desmond, the former owner of the Daily Express. But what I'm told is that he didn't used to be this kind of politician. I don't know whether you find this stuff as interesting as I do. The question of whether or not the man complaining about the colour of people's faces in a town he doesn't inhabit, while inhabiting a town where everybody is the same colour as him, whether or not he was always like this and pretended not to be. So I think David Cameron was sincere in his sort of flabby bonhomie. You know, his hood, what was it, hugger hoodie? Hugger husky? I forget. I think it was both. I think he was sincere. An existence of extraordinary privilege. But I don't think that he was quietly hating while publicly having to make speeches about community and diversity and even net zero, actually, but we don't need to bring that into it. I think that David Cameron, and therefore the people that were around him in his party that he knew best, I think that they were I'm going to say decent, and you'll get cross with me because of austerity, but I don't think that they were bigots. I don't think you would rise in that party if you were a bigot, either in public or in private, because if you were doing it in private, they'd know. That's what the whips do. But some people would have got through the net. And by the time Boris Johnson ended up in Downing Street and got rid of everybody in the parliamentary party prepared to tell the truth about anything, I don't know why, but Robert Jenrick is now holding up a wig at the Conservative Party conference. Should we have a listen to why? Because, no, let's not have a listen to why. Because attacks on judges, if that is indeed what he's engaging in, have a very, very long and hideous history in democracies. Anyway, I digress, because we're talking about him having a go at black people now, not having a go at judges. I look at the sort of vista, if you like, of public opinion and public discourse. And I look at what people like Jenrick are doing now. The last caller was brilliant, wasn't he? Just trying to, and a previous caller saying, trying to eat Reform's lunch or trying to eat Nigel Farage's lunch. And I wonder whether they've always been like that or whether, so when were they biting their tongue? Are they doing it now? Are they getting up in the morning and thinking, I'm going to make a speech to a Conservative Party group later. I'm going to complain about all the black people in town. And then 5 years previously, they would never have dreamed of saying that in public or in private. So I don't know. And I don't particularly care. But the authentic Bob Jenrick, was he the one complaining about black people, or is the authentic Bob Jenrick the one who was happy to serve and to join a party led by David Cameron? I'm always fascinated by that. I'm always fascinated. Some people don't believe in anything, of course. Anything at all. They're the worst in a way, because they'll blow in whatever way the wind pushes them. But some people, of course, know that their beliefs, their private beliefs, are currently unacceptable, and they're waiting for the moment where their private beliefs can be publicly articulated. I don't know which one he is, and I'm not even asking you which one he is, because I'm too busy asking you what you think he meant when he complained about a lack of integration because he didn't see any white faces. Who is he complaining? Is he complaining about white people not moving to Handsworth? I've got a feeling that he isn't. Spoiler alert. He's complaining about people he knows to be detached from or not engaged in British life. Spoiler alert, he wouldn't have the Scooby-Doo about that. So what is he actually saying? What do you hear when you hear a shadow justice minister, especially if it's your part of town, your part of the country, your neck of the woods? What do you hear when you hear him saying, I went to Handsworth and I didn't see another white face. That's not the kind of country I want to live in. Catherine is in, guess where? Handsworth. Catherine, what would you like to say?
Hello, good afternoon.
Hello.
I was rather flabbergasted when I heard those comments this morning. I was watching the news, and I'm thinking, you know, I wonder which part of Handsworth Mr. Jenrick went to. Because I've lived in Handsworth for 32 years. I've been in this country for 45. I'm from the French Caribbean. Obviously, I am black from the French Caribbean. But I do have white friends who live in Handsworth.
What?
They're here.
What?
I have neighbors across the road who are white.
Of course you
know.
Do. Yes.
Yeah. And so I don't know, see, which part of Handsworth that he went to.
I think it goes to a different school, Catherine, the part of Handsworth that he went to. What do you think his intention is when he makes comments like this that you know from your lived, well, from looking out of your front door, you know it's not true? What do you think he's trying to achieve by telling these lies?
Well, I think that, well, as the other gentleman said before, he said about eating Nigel Farage dinner. And, you know, trying to get votes for the Conservative Party. You know, but surely we don't want him to divide this in the country, because that's definitely not productive.
Tell me a bit about Handsworth. I mean, it's changed in the 33 years that you've been living there, I presume.
We can see, okay, there is a main road, which is Soho Road. And I must say that it has changed a lot. Mm. And it is predominantly, you know, the shops are predominantly, you know, Asian shops, but that reflects, you know, the sort of demographics that you have, you see, in the area.
Like Hounslow.
But there are other shops as well. There are Caribbean shops as well. You know, even in the minority, see, but yeah, it has changed, see, a lot. But you see, okay, we do have a lot of, you know, Polish people from Eastern Europe in the area. You do have, you see, Caribbean people that you see as well. You see, you know, a lot of, you know, Asian from, you know, Pakistan, India. It has changed, but we live peacefully.
So what you're describing to me, a big city in the Western world.
Yes.
Really? Aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
A big city Absolutely. In the Western world, and a city that has roots in Windrush and in Commonwealth diasporas, not in your case, given that you're from the French Caribbean, but an awful lot of the people that you've just described would have come from families who came over as part of the with the very British identities and came over as part of the consolidated effort to rebuild the country after the Second World War. I know Handsworth a bit. I mean, I know it's got a big Caribbean. Can I read you something? This is from a professor of law at University College of London. He's put it up on his LinkedIn. Someone's just brought it to my attention. Robert Jenrick, I was born and raised in Handsworth. Let me tell you something about it and why I'm so proud I grew up there. You are right, it is a diverse and multicultural place. I went to school with white kids and kids from all over the Commonwealth, including India, Pakistan and the Caribbean, and beyond. Many of them coming here because their families had deep links to Britain. My grandfather, for example, was a Sikh junior commissioned officer who fought in the war for the British Indian Army. Having come here, they also contributed. West Indians worked in the munitions factories during the war, and many Indian communities, including my own, helped with the rebuilding effort after the war by working in the foundries. It isn't through just the history that matters. Handsworth was a community where, for all the diversity, people and the communities to which they belonged worked hard, treated each other with respect, tolerance, and an attitude of trust and goodwill, despite many having to face poverty, unemployment, and discrimination. These are the values, British values, that I grew up with and love. You don't know anything about what it means to be British.
He's right.
Pretty strong stuff.
Absolutely, because my husband's family is from Jamaica. They came here as part of the Windrush, generation. You know, and they have integrated well. I have integrated wherever I've lived. I've lived in Warsaw before. I lived in Handsworth. And wherever I went, I integrated. You know, I made sure that, you know, I talked to my neighbors. Anybody is welcome through my front door. My children, as you have got friends of every color. And, you know, I have taught them the one thing is do respect people. You respect people, you live in peace.
I hope so. And I hope you're right. I recognize the world that you describe. Catherine, thank you. That point there, isn't it? Also, I'm reminded of what Sadiq Khan was saying about why racists have such a huge problem with him and with London. And it is, of course, because it flies in the face of all of their bigotries and prejudices, the idea that you can't, if you do have the kind of diversity that Catherine's just described, then it will end badly. And to that end, I should remind you, or I'll probably tell you for the first time, that the Scotland Yard Commander Andrew Featherstone has doubled down on data showing a decrease of 13% in robbery this year and pushed back against people telling lies about the capital for whatever reason. I'm not just people in British public life, of course, but also people, an extraordinary number of people in public life in the United States of America. Asked about perceptions that London was becoming unsafe, he said that there was no doubt it suited some people, organisations and others to suggest this. When you look at the actual facts, he said, that is not true. Farage had, of course, described some of the statistics released as unbelievable. So Nigel Farage calling the police liars while the police deal with the actual statistics and, of course, run towards the trouble that the rest of ourselves tend to run away from. A remarkable illustration of the bigger picture, if you like, and a reminder of what Catherine just described. Diversity. They hate diversity, actual diversity, because it flies in the face of their racial supremacy theories. 12:16 is the time.
This is LBC.
Big, big, big motoring world. Wow, wow, wow motoring world.
Yes, that's right. Big Motoring World is also Wow Motoring World because we price check our cars every day to guarantee you our best price with up to 95% of them below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on what matters to you. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
A Southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one-third with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
How will you react if you win big with Win Plus?
I can't believe it!
Enter now at winplus.co.uk to get in the draw. 18 plus GB only. T's and C's apply.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay? But I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
17 minutes after 12. Extraordinary, really, to reflect upon how many people who claim to be patriotic go along with foreign depictions of our big cities as unpleasant or dangerous. It's crime everywhere, but you would take your chances in London or Birmingham long before you take your chances in a lot of American cities, any American city practically. And yet on it goes, with British politicians, most obviously Farage, joining in with attempts to malign our cities, to malign our politicians, to malign our mayors, especially ones who look like Sadiq Khan, you'll find. Donald Trump has a particular problem with the mayor of London. But it is to Birmingham that honest Bob Jenrick decided to turn his attention and complain about the fact that when he was wandering around Handsworth making a film that featured exclusively white people, he didn't see any white people. I'll say that again in case you think you misheard. You can, of course, always rewind live radio on Global Player. But honest Bob Jenrick went to Birmingham to make a film about litter, and he complained that he didn't see any white people while making a film that didn't feature anybody who wasn't white. I mean, there are moments, aren't there, where you sort of are just faffing about in the studio, describing stuff, waiting to talk to Kasim, who's also in Handsworth, Ray, who's up on Merseyside, maybe you next. And you sort of think, this isn't normal. This isn't normal. You've made a film and everyone in it is white, and you've gone out for dinner and told all the Conservatives at that dinner that you didn't see anyone white when you were in Handsworth. Now, even if that were true, that you didn't see anyone white when you were in Handsworth, so what? You have no knowledge, no insight, no understanding whatsoever of what they're personal lives involved. You don't know what Catherine's been doing for the 33 years she's lived there. You have no clue about the lives of the people that you have seen who are apparently not white. But you have enough evidence to conclude that they are not integrated. And when a journalist asks you what the hell you're talking about, you accuse him of somehow inciting terrorism. A black journalist. This isn't normal. This isn't normal. It's pretty horrible. And it's all part of the same pattern, isn't it? The maligning of our cities by foreign politicians and foreign activists telling lies about London. Robert Jenrick telling lies about Birmingham. And trying to show kinship with people who don't like non-white faces. And anyway, his commitment to integration is probably best displayed by the fact that he's chosen to live in a village where 165 of the 166 residents are white. So what's he actually saying? What are you hearing when he says these words? Kasim is in, guess where? Handsworth. Kasim, what would you like to say?
How are you doing? Nice to speak to you, James.
Likewise.
Finally get to speak to you.
Thank you.
Just want to say, I've lived in Handsworth 35 years of my life. My grandfather, my mother, have lived there for, you know, 50, 60 plus years, and it's lies. That's one thing I want to say. There is a community of British white people. You know, we've got neighbours. You know, my grandfather came to this country 60-odd years ago. He went to the pub, and an English lady taught him how to use a knife and fork. And, you know, and still to this day, you know, he always talks about it, mentions how, you know, he's came to this country and he's came to help because that's what he wanted to do. Based on this politician's comments, really boils down to he didn't integrate with the community. That's why he didn't see no white faces, because he didn't. He spent an hour and a half there.
I think he did. He's playing to his audience, saying that he didn't.
Of course. And that's the thing, because if you was to flip the scale around, and if I was, for instance, a brown politician, black, white, black or Asian, and I was to go to the middle of Solihull and say, well, there's no Asian faces, they're not integrating, how would I then stand?
Well, that's what it speaks to. That's why I keep asking the same question, because there's a subtleness to it, isn't there? Because what he's appealing to are people who probably balk at being called racist, and are probably fair to balk at being called racist, because they're not ever going to be, you know, scrawling National Front slogans on local people's front doors, or they're never going to turn up even at the sort of marches arranged by massive racists. They possibly even wouldn't vote for someone who is avowedly racist, but actually they might vote for them. That's the gamble that he's taking. But the idea is that if you turned up in Robert Jenrick's village and complained that everyone was white, you would be doing something very different from him turning up in your town and complaining that nobody is white. It speaks to an idea that they have started saying out loud this year, last year, that you can't be British, or you certainly can't be English, unless you're actually white. And that's what he's speaking to, I think, when he conflates colour with integration.
But in that sense, you know, for him to think that you can't be British and of a different nationality in regards to race, this country is built on this, which we all know. I don't need to repeat it, and you know, you hear it every day from all your callers. We're built on immigration. We're built on multiculturalism, and the world the UK is working. It's just these handful of people trying to stir the pot, cause division. Same with the flags. I've got no issue people flying the flags, but fly it in an appropriate way. Fly it from your heart, not from your anger in your heart. Because that's where a lot of the flags are getting flown from, is the anger inside them. From people's comments, like this gentleman, to say, oh, a part of Birmingham doesn't have any English people. What's going to happen to the far right? Now that's give them another ego boost to be like, okay, now we can start mentioning Handsworth.
It's not
the case. And, you know, Birmingham is a very, very multicultural town, and everyone here, obviously you have your bad people, but everyone here wants to work together. You do have your, you know, your odd few, but, yeah.
On we go. On we go. And I think there's a fair consensus on what it is that he is trying to do. Kasim's nailed it. I'd add it to that growing rhetoric. I don't think he's contributed directly to it yet, but questioning whether or not somebody can be British or English or not, depending upon their skin colour, as opposed to their passport, their place of birth, their family history. And of course, this is one of the reasons why they all hate history so much. They hate teaching about colonialism and things like that, because of course, to sustain your racist supremacy, you need to make sure that the people you're appealing to for support don't know that we marched all the way around the world and assumed control of untold dominions and somehow managed to persuade a lot of the people living there that they were British now, or they were part of the British Empire now, and that this was the mothership. The UK, Britain, was the mothership. And so if that has been a key part of your colonial mission, then to turn around 50 years, 60 years, 70 years later and say you have no right to be here and you were never British at all is an almost sustainable position, but only, of course, if people have been taught about colonialism, which is why people like Robert Jenrick, I don't know whether him specifically, but people like him, also get their knickers in a right old twist about the teaching of colonialism. It's all linked, all of the stuff that sort of populates the opinion pages of the Daily Telegraph. You can read through it once you know what's going on. It's absolutely crystal clear what they're doing. But there it is. This is the latest chapter in an old story. Ray's in Knowsley on Merseyside. Ray, what would you like to say?
Yeah, well, obviously, I mean, he's fanning the flames for his own gains, isn't he? Because, I mean, a character like him, obviously he must have gone through school and then college and then university, and he knows that, you know, immigration or people coming in from different parts of the world can only benefit the wider society.
I wonder, I mean, I was slightly taken aback by the figures from Herefordshire, I grew up in Worcestershire, which is next door to Herefordshire, and it's also next door to Birmingham. So it feels like not home necessarily, but looking at that census statistic, the idea that he grew up in he's raising his family, his children in a town where everybody is white, except for literally one person. And then you look at the broader pictures for the whole of Hereford and the percentage of black people there, not including Asian, but the percentage of black people there is 0.5%. Mm-hmm. There are huge swathes of this country where you could grow up utterly unaware of what people like you and me and Kasim and most of my other callers take for granted. That is becoming increasingly clear to me in these conversations.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, to be like astutely aware of the different races and there being a lack of white or overly black, isn't that a problem in itself? Mm. I mean,
it's like, a weird response to have, isn't it, when you get off the bus?
Why are you doing it to yourself? I mean, why are you harbouring these thoughts and these, you know, these opinions? And when, you know, if you could have a friend who's got, you know, relatives or, you know, who have come from the likes of Nigeria or the likes of the Maldives or Phuket or Beijing, you know, isn't that a good thing? You know, isn't that something that you'd want to celebrate?
No, not for these people. Categorically not. No, it just isn't. And I mean, it is something that has always been there, but which perhaps naively we thought might have been consigned to the sort of scrap heap in the 1970s and the 1980s. The idea that it is self-evident is simply not true. I mean, there's a million problems with racism. Of course there are, and I'm white, so I don't suffer from it at all, but it's because of the agency it gives to lies. You can't be racist unless you're a liar. The idea that person over there is inferior to you because of their skin colour is an obvious lie. And once that lie is out of the gates, once that lie is free, once that lie is halfway around the world, the truth hasn't even got its trousers on. You can lie about anything you want. Donald Trump is a wonderful example of the license to lie that racism, public racism and obvious racism gives you. Because if you can lie about that, if you can lie about the very nature of humanity, you can lie about absolutely anything. And there will, to challenge race, optimism, and I wish I didn't have to, there will be people cheering you to the rafters for doing so, up to and including the point they start chasing down masked, armed men, start chasing whoever they want around the United States of America for the offence of looking a little bit too foreign. And that is essentially four steps up the path that Robert Jenrick is on when he talks about not seeing any white faces in Handsworth. Well, I mean, I rounding them up is what they're doing now in the United States of America, but you begin by complaining about how many there are. Amelia Cox has your headlines.
Thousands of people have gathered at memorial events in Israel to mark 2 years since Hamas carried out its attacks on October the 7th. Here, the Prime Minister is urging students not to take part in pro-Palestinian protests planned at some universities. 20 councillors have defected from the Conservative Party to reform. Kemi Badenoch says her party is shedding a lot of baggage, but says she will measure its success at the next general election. And police say they've disrupted an international gang thought to be behind 40% of phone thefts in London. Some 46 people have been arrested after officers discovered thousands of devices being shipped out of the country. LBC weather turning brighter in Scotland and Northern Ireland this afternoon. Showers moving into the far northwest, mostly cloudy elsewhere, with spells of rain moving into northern England and Wales, a high of 18 degrees.
This is LBC.
Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are here. 2 days of big deals on electronics, home, kitchen and more that'll make you feel less like and more like feel like a big deal. Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October, exclusively for Prime members. Shop now.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero-emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345-6060-973.
It is 12:33 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I don't know. Bruce is like me, wondering whether or not Honest Bob Jenrick was always this vile, or whether he's adopted the vileness in order to ride the current political waves. He says, I don't believe he genuinely has these views. He's just an opportunist and feels that this will help his leadership ambitions. I don't really think he believes in anything, says Bruce. I'm told he grew up in Wolverhampton. Is that correct? I mean, Wolverhampton is another incredibly diverse Midland city. Extraordinary if he did, that he is unnerved or unhappy when he gets out of a car in Handsworth and doesn't see any other white faces. What was he doing in Handsworth, I hear you say? To which the answer is, he was making one of his little films. Honest Bob's little films. Like his films about graffiti and his films about tube twains and his films about wobbish on the streets. And while he was in Birmingham making his film about litter, I think, on this occasion in Birmingham, in Handsworth particularly. That's where he said he'd been making the film, and he made his comments about not seeing any other white faces. I went to Handsworth in Birmingham the other day to do a video on litter, he said. I want you to keep those words in your mind. So Honest Bob Jenrick said, and I quote, I went to Handsworth the other day to do a video on litter. And then he said, I didn't see another white face. That's not the kind of country I want to live in. I apologise in advance for inflicting upon you footage that has its origins on GBBs, as it is affectionately known. But I thought it might be quite interesting to have a little look, insofar as you can on the radio, to have a little look at the people who contributed to his little film when he was making it in a place where, by his own account, he didn't see any other white face.
I find it's disgusting. They all get brought up and not...
She's white, for the avoidance of doubt.
What do you think we should be doing to stop him?
People should take responsibility.
She's still white.
But people
she is white.
Pride in anything of today.
But he didn't see any other white faces.
Fly tipping is horrendous.
She is also white. This lady is also white.
You live in Sutton Coldfield.
I live in Sutton Coldfield.
And he didn't see any other white faces when he was in Handsworth?
Litter.
Yeah.
Can't stand litter.
That's another white person. That's three. That's white, white,
around,
white.
Fly tipping.
They should be behind to get it all up.
And so you live here.
I do.
And you've just been helping out with the litter pick. Tell me about what's going on the estate.
You mean what's not going on the estate?
White.
There is more
also
litter,
white.
And there is more fly tipping. So that puts more pressure on community
finally,
groups like ours to step
white.
In to help.
Five people, all white, in the place where, Honest Bob Jenrick said, he didn't see another white face. And the thing is, the thing that gets me sometimes, not all the time, the thing that gets me sometimes doesn't matter, because the people he's appealing to don't care about the facts. They're just really glad someone's complained about all the non-white faces. All the non-white, wherever they are. Oh, they're not integrated. He's been elected Mayor of London three times. Yeah, but stop actually detailing things. Stop asking me difficult questions. I just want to say, that person over there is a different colour from me, and I really don't like it. That's what Honest Bob has done. That's who he has appealed to. And none of it matters. The facts don't matter. The facts don't matter. Tim's in Hull. Tim, what do you reckon? What's he up to?
Hi, James. All right.
All good, mate.
Yeah. So I'm just ringing up to try and answer your question based on the idea that I think that it's possible that he has like a mistrust for areas like that. So he feels as though that because he doesn't see any other white faces within the area, or claims
except all
them.
Of the people in the film that he made in the area the where people, he didn't see any white faces.
But I think it feels to him as though that it's something that's out of his control. That it's something that he can't control for that reason. Do you know, like I think he feels it's like a misconception amongst them people. Possibly conservatives, you could say, or right wing, that they have a misconception about that idea, about the idea that there's something underhand in those kind of areas, do you know, that's going on, that they're not privy to, that they, you know, that they're...
It's conditioning, isn't it? And it's got a little side order of, oh, I don't mean you. Because, you know, I'm sure he doesn't feel uncomfortable when he sits down at Cabinet in between Kemi Badenoch and James Cleverly.
Yeah,
there's a bit of class attached to this as well.
Attached to it as well. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the thing that he seems to underestimate is the intelligence of the class he considers to be below him. Do you know what I mean? That's the thing that he doesn't consider. Do you know, like he seems to think, oh, because he's gone through all these educational routes, that it makes him some kind of superior being. Do you know,
or frightened. I mean, I wonder if the sense of like manufactured, confected superiority is a consequence of fear, a fear of the unknown. And it depends how you're raised, Tim, I think. You know, you could easily be raised, and where you're raised. If you're raised with neighbours who don't look like you or cousins who don't look like you, then you're not going to be frightened of it. If you're raised in a place like where Herefordshire, where he's raising his children, then you are more likely to be frightened of the unknown, and you respond to that by, well, I don't know, really. You can either find out more about the thing that's frightened you.
I was just going to say, sorry to interrupt, by putting yourself into the unknown and realising that those thoughts are misleading you. Do you know what I mean? Like, me and my mates have always said for years that if you go to places like that, it's like the comparison between the idea of white and black or brown. You go to places like that and they'll be the first people to open their door to you, and they'll invite you in and they'll offer you food and they'll offer you comfort and they'll offer you warmth. And yet you tend to see, or it tends to lean towards the idea that white people don't do that. Do you know, that aren't as welcome. I mean, they are people, don't get me wrong, but...
Sure.
But it's like the point I'm trying to make, I think, is that it's like a misconception about that idea. Do you know, there is like an underlying misconception about.
And it's not organic. It's for some people it would be an inevitable consequence of the way they were raised, and for other people, it is something that they have almost elected to ferment and to fester. And for some people, like Honest Bob Jenrick, he sees opportunity. You and I see sadness and division. He sees opportunity. He'll pile down on it. And the claims about actually being a secret fan of integration and wanting it look absolutely ridiculous when you reflect upon the reality of other parts of the country where you wouldn't see a brown face or a black face in a month of Sundays, including the place where he has, of course, chosen to live. Thank you, Tim. 20 to 1 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Looking at his constituency, because, of course, he has the family home. Remember this, the detail of how many properties he owned came to light when he was found to have broken lockdown rules, didn't it? By driving in between them, I think, if I've got that right, those details right. So, Tim Bale, rather splendid, academic professor of politics at Queen Mary University. He's just had a look at the ethnic makeup of the entire constituency that Robert Jenrick serves in Newark in Nottinghamshire, where it appears that the ethnic minority population of its main town is smaller than the white population of Handsworth. So there is considerably less integration in the main town in his own constituency if that's the word you're going to use to describe disparity or diversity, then his own hometown is worse. Unless, of course, 99% white is good and 99% black is bad, which some people feel. But they should probably say so, shouldn't they? I've got another... Is it a misinformation for you? I think it is as well, involving some claims that were made recently about people on benefits, particularly people who were not necessarily born here on benefits, and claims from another Tory politician who I hadn't actually heard of before that have now been completely debunked, and that despite the fact that they were published unchallenged in a national newspaper. I've also got a rather splendid missing round for you, missing word round. I like this one. It's one of the easier ones we've done. But you have to think laterally. Are you ready? Peru bishop. It's probably easier if I say Peruvian, isn't it? Peruvian bishop with 17 blank. I nearly said it out loud then. That was close. That would have ruined everything for everybody. Peruvian bishop with 17 blanks exposed by cleaning lady. What could the missing word be in this round? Peruvian bishop with 17 blanks exposed by cleaning lady. I'll tell you after the next break. But before that, Richard is in Birmingham. Richard, what would you like to say?
Good afternoon, James. You just said that thing about Honest Bob. But if Bob was honest, he wouldn't have went to Answorth, because one of the ladies that was speaking was from Sutton Coalfield, which is a white, rich, affluent area. She wouldn't be in Answorth cleaning up the rubbish on the street.
But she might, she might have been. You know, she might be actually quite community-spirited. But, anyway, we've got enough to...
We digress. I can't stand this white privilege. I'm a black male. I'm 60 years old. I'm a school teacher. I go into meetings every week, and I'm the only black face. You don't hear me whinging and whining.
Well, it wouldn't. I mean, you've said nothing that surprises me, except in the context of Robert Jenrick thinking that the opposite experience is discombobulating or evidence of something really bad and really negative.
I think the guy needs to get off his IOS and realise that he might be the spawn of Enoch Powell.
Yeah.
And stop feeding Tommy Robinson's agenda. I think this is what it's all about.
I got some Tommy Robinson news that I forgot to share yesterday on the programme. He just reminded me that I should probably... Actually, I won't do that today, of all days. I'll save that one for tomorrow, just in case people aren't aware of it. But it is simply, in your view, a case of pandering to prejudice.
Prejudice and white privilege, because how can he, in 2025, say that I went to Answorth and I didn't see a white face? It's like me saying I went to Birmingham City Centre... Mm. And I didn't see an Asian person. It's just stupid.
And it hinges on that thing that has only come out of the woodwork relatively recently, that you can't be British if you're not white, or you certainly can't be English if you're not white. So four generations.
Even though I was born here, one of my friends in the pub the other day said, I can't be English because I haven't been here long enough, which is a load of codswallop.
Well, it is. And, of course, they wouldn't say that to a white person.
No.
Boris Johnson, for example.
Isn't he Polish or Romanian or something?
Turkish. He's got Turkish heritage, and he was born in America.
See? There you go. Mm. White privilege again.
I think so. Thank you, mate. Thank you, Richard. You just saved me then from a little tickle in the throat as well. Time now is 12:45.
LBC's Make Some Noise.
This Friday is Make Some Noise Day, LBC's charity fundraiser helping brilliant projects right across the UK. And right now you can get involved with an exciting prize. You and one guest could be exclusively joining us behind the scenes here at LBC. Start the day with a coffee and a Q&A with Nick Ferrari. Then grab your spot in the studio to watch me, James O'Brien, in action. We'll give you a private tour of the studios here at Global, from LBC to Heart, Capital, and even the Newsagents podcast, before you catch up with Sheila Fogarty and hear about how she puts her show together. Then it's off for a lavish afternoon tea at Soho House Hotel. And if that's not enough, you'll also get two tickets to see my Full Disclosure podcast live in London on the 19th of February. To enter this competition, pay attention, text the word STUDIO, S-T-U-D-I-O, to 84850. That's STUDIO to 84850. By entering, you'll have the chance to make a voluntary £10 donation, which will be added to your phone bill. 100% goes to LBC's charity, Make Some Noise. You've got until 4pm on Friday, that's the 10th of October, to enter. Standard network rates apply. You must be 18 or over to enter. And for full terms and conditions, including prize date restrictions, visit lbc.co.uk. And good luck. Make sure you stay with LBC this Friday for Make Some Noise Day to discover more ways in which you can help our fantastic charity.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
On the second anniversary of the massacre of Israelis on October the 7th, one released hostage shares his story with LBC. What chances for peace?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees. Like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays. Make money work for you.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
We had our smart meter installed a year ago, and it's made things so much easier. Not having to submit meter readings or having to deal with estimated bills is great.
A smart meter sends meter readings direct to your energy supplier. It means you get accurate bills, not estimated bills, and you don't even need an internet connection. Call your energy supplier to request a smart meter today.
Real testimonials voiced by actors. Eligibility may vary.
James O'Brien on LBC. Text 84850.
It's 10 to 1, And here we are again. Extraordinary to read something that I printed out this morning. No one uses a printer anymore except me in this building, but I like to have stuff in front of me. This is an 11-year-old article. I shouldn't have told you that because I was going to read bits of it. Well, actually, I could still read bits of it. A local councillor, born and bred in the Black Country, succeeded in mobilising racist working-class sentiment against a seemingly patrician rival. This is a Conservative politician, was the local councillor, and the Labour politician in this by-election, was the apparently patrician character, who was derided by local Conservatives for living in London's genteel Hampstead Garden suburb, far from industrial Smethwick, with its foundries, housing shortages and economic uncertainties. How easy, the Conservative candidate said, to support uncontrolled immigration when one lives in a garden suburb. Does that give anybody pause? This is an election that happened in 1964. And these people, the racist, this is a character who put up signs saying, if you want an N-word for a neighbour, vote Labour. They were still talking about uncontrolled immigration and how anybody who doesn't live in the kind of places that Robert Jenrick has been talking about must somehow be insulated from the reality of how awful it is. And then, of course, when you do the polling, it's places like, well, I don't want to single anywhere out, but it's places where there isn't any immigration, that fears of immigration are always highest. So it's the polar opposite of reality, this argument. And yet, of course, and he lost. I mean, he didn't, he won the election in 64. And as the defeated Labour candidate walked away, Tory supporters yelled after him, "Where are your N-words now, Walker? Take your N-words away." Back in the House of Commons, new Labour Prime Minister called on the Tory leader, Alec Douglas-Hume, to disown Griffiths, the character who had conducted this campaign, Peter Griffiths. "If you want an N-word for a neighbour, vote Labour." Wilson said, "If Sir Alec does not take what I am sure is the right course, Smethwick Conservatives can have the satisfaction of having sent a member who, until another election returns him to oblivion, will serve his time as a parliamentary leper." 25, this line is brilliant. Listen to this. 25 Tories walked out of the chamber in protest and proposed a motion deploring Wilson's insulting language. Labour members countered by proposing a motion reproving the Prime Minister for insulting lepers. We're not back there yet, but we're on the same path, aren't we, when a senior Conservative politician complains about not seeing enough or any white faces in a suburb of Birmingham, despite living in an area where there aren't any black faces at all, or there's one out of 166 people. Raj is in Fulham. What's he up to, Raj?
I just think he's coming from a place of such naivety, and for me, I think it's just extremely concerning that he's so out of touch with the reality of certain parts of the country. I mean, if he thinks that the colour of somebody's skin determines an area, and the thing is, he wasn't there all day, he didn't have a good look around, but the fact is, when are we going to be in a situation where we don't hear senior politicians, you know, essentially sideline minority communities?
There's no sugarcoating it, is it? He's telling you.
And the fact that I think it's been a while since I've been on the air, and I was just compelled to pick up the phone in this case. But the fact that he says he doesn't regret those comments. How long did he think about that to come out with the I don't regret what I said? Because especially the timing.
He pushed comments back at a black journalist and accused them of somehow, by raising these points and by questioning these comments, he came out as kind of somehow, I didn't follow the logic here, but he talked about promoting or causing terrorism.
Again, he's coming from a position of ignorance, and that's the only thing I can say.
That's very kind. I don't think he's ignorant at all. I don't think he's ignorant at all. No, I don't. I honestly don't. I think he knows exactly what he's doing, and it was very much intended for the audience he was speaking to, but he's left with no choice but to own it in common parlance, modern parlance, when the comments actually reach a much wider audience. And, of course, it is the discomfort of that knowledge that prompts him to be so rude and incomprehensible when pushed back by the journalist on Sky News who we heard from earlier. Thank you, Raj. A little bit of business to be attended to. Peru Bishop, I asked you earlier, with 17 blanks exposed by cleaning lady. Most popular answer? Kids, which is actually how the producer responded as well. Not correct, but kind of on the right page. The correct answer is lovers. Peruvian bishop with 17 lovers exposed by cleaning lady. There's a headline and a half. I mean, to be fair, it doesn't necessarily prompt you to read the rest of the article because it's all in the headline. Peruvian bishop with 17 lovers exposed by cleaning lady. And the Sun finally got around today to correcting an article written on July the 16th. And what I want you to bear in mind as a lover of radio, is that sometimes radio presenters will get stories out of newspapers and use them to promote phone-ins, and lots of people will ring in, and the claim upon which the entire phone-in is based goes completely unchallenged because it's in a newspaper. And then months later, a newspaper issues a correction and clarification, in this case of the Sun. And, of course, those of us who may have mistakenly used it as a springboard into a phone-in show, inviting people to ring in and agree with sentiments built upon something that turned out not to be true, we'll never mention it again. We'll never say, "Oh, do you remember that phone-in we had a couple of months ago about foreign nationals claiming benefits. Turns out it was all a load of old nonsense. That never, ever, ever happened. I hope I would do it, but I can't guarantee that I would because I may not even notice. A July the 16th article stated that 1.3 million foreign nationals were able to claim benefits because they had become eligible for indefinite leave to remain. In fact, the majority of those claimants were entitled under the EU settlement scheme, while others were entitled because they had been granted refugee status. In fact, just over 200,000 were entitled because they had been granted ILR. So just out by over a million. And of those, some will be British citizens now. Article also claimed that a Conservative proposal to remove benefits from those with indefinite leave to remain would save billions of pounds. In fact, the proposal would not apply to those with EU settled status, those who arrived under the Ukraine visa schemes, the Afghan citizens resettlement scheme, the Afghan relocations and assistance policy, or on a British national overseas visa. So, I mean, wrong on every imaginable level, this article, which would have upset and exercised a lot of people. And I find you wondering what Sun journalist could possibly have written that? Answer, it wasn't written by a Sun journalist. It was written by a Conservative politician called Katie Lamb. And that only gets corrected and clarified in October, having been published in July. So the old line about the truth being, the lie being halfway around the world before the truth has got its trousers on, has really been more accurate than it is today. And you wonder, don't you? Because there'll be an office there. She won't necessarily, she won't have just written it herself and sent it off. It goes through other people. Colleagues, Spads would have looked at it. There would have been people at The Sun who would have looked at it. And nobody anywhere in that process went, can we check this is true? Can we just double check the numbers? I wonder why. That is it from me for today. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player and on the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on all the top stories and opinions. You can put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts, including this week's Full Disclosure with the His Eminence, Sir Jamie of Oliver. One of my all-time favourite interviews, that. And don't forget, you can pause and rewind it. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Sorbitt will be with you at 4 on LBC, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
We were talking about healthy eating, weren't we, yesterday?
We were, yes.
Look what I've brought in today.
Not healthy. But, no, all things in moderation.
All things in moderation.
This is Jamie's point.
It's a squashed fairy cake, everybody.
Yum. Thank
yum,
you.
Yum.
Is it for me?
No, it's for me, but there are some more in there if you want one.
Good.
You're very welcome. Now, thank you very much, James. This afternoon, going to spend a lot of the afternoon, not all of it, reflecting on October the 7th, both the events of the day 2 years ago and where it's brought the world, not least Gaza and Israel, most importantly Gaza and Israel, but also the rest of the world as well. In a moment, you'll hear the first part of an interview I did some time ago, a week or so ago, with a survivor of October the 7th, a man who was held hostage for hundreds of days by Hamas, Eli Sharabi. His wife and two daughters were murdered by Hamas on the day of the October the 7th massacre. You'll hear his thoughts, his survival story, and we'll reflect on those protests and celebrations, yes, celebrations, that are taking place.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, thousands of Israelis are taking part in events to mark the second anniversary of the October 7th attacks carried out by Hamas. British students are being urged not to take part in pro-Palestinian protests planned at some universities here. The Prime Minister says too many previous demonstrations have turned into forums for hate and anti-Semitism. Speaking at the Conservative Party conference, Shadow Home Secretary Chris Philp called for a stringent response to those taking part.
Those expressing extremism or anti-Semitism or racial or religious hatred of any kind or support for terrorism who are not British citizens should be removed from this country, including those at the student marches today.
Sheila will be speaking to one of the hostages, Eli Sharabi, who was captured on October the 7th on LBC next. The Shadow Justice Secretary has hit out at what he called problem activist judges during his speech to the Conservative Party conference. Robert Jenrick claims some have spent their whole careers fighting to keep illegal migrants in the UK. He's also promised to abolish the Sentencing Council, who he believes is responsible for so-called two-tier policing.
20 Tory councillors have defected to Reform UK. Nigel Farage made the announcement on the eve of the conclusion of the party's conference in Manchester. Leader Kemi Badenoch says her party is shedding a lot of baggage. The head of the Metropolitan Police has told LBC that teenage thieves are earning £2,000 a day from stealing phones. Sir Mark Rowley was speaking after a two-week operation to dismantle a network believed to be behind 40% of phone thefts in London. 46 people have been arrested over the alleged plot to ship the devices to China. The commission has told us there are crazy numbers involved.
We certainly have seen some evidence of young people in their teens or early 20s who are drawn into criminality, sliding across from being involved in drugs to actually going out and doing phone theft instead. Because if you're stealing, say, 5 or 6 phones in a morning and you're going to get £200 to £400 for those, depending what model they are, you're making £1,000 or £2,000 a day.
And chemicals giant INEOS is cutting a fifth of jobs at a plant in Hull, blaming what it called dirt cheap imports from China and high energy costs. The company says more roles will be at risk across the industry without government intervention. LBC weather turning brighter in Scotland and Northern Ireland this afternoon. Showers moving into the far northwest. Mostly cloudy elsewhere with spells of rain moving into Northern England and Wales. A high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission. And it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you if you're just joining us here at LBC. Today, as I'm sure you know if you've been listening already, is the second anniversary of the October the 7th massacre by Hamas and other criminals, but mainly Hamas, of Israelis and some other citizens living and working in Israel. A brutal, brutal series of events. The Nova Festival, the murder, the rape, the mutilation of so many young people who were at a dance festival, a music festival, and families murdered, brutalised in their own homes. 250 plus people abducted on the day from their own homes and from the festival, many of whom still in captivity. It was a horrendous day. It slowly emerged, didn't it, on the day, at just what we were looking at. And I mean, that was my experience of it anyway. I woke up in the morning listening to the radio and I'll never forget the detail I was hearing and thinking, what's this? What's this? And as the day wore on, it became all too clear what it was. And I think it's fair to say, and I'd love to talk to you about it this hour and the next hour, it's fair to say that those events have changed the world. They've certainly changed the Middle East. They've left the people of Gaza, their homes, their lives in pieces. They've left the people of Israel in shock still 2 years on. And the people of Gaza are experiencing what they're experiencing in shock as well and in grief on all sides. The world is different because of those events, without a shadow of a doubt. And I want this hour to commemorate October the 7th, to commemorate. If you have a personal connection to it, do feel free to call here and remember your reflections on it as well. And to, for my part, to sympathise with you for what happened on that day. We'll also reflect later in the programme on the fact that people, particularly students, but not only students, are in some cases celebrating those events of October the 7th, remembering them with glee, remembering them with pride for the attack that it was on Israel, a country they regard as illegitimate, a country they regard as just oppressors and nothing else. There's a lot to talk about, but this hour I want really just to commemorate, as Israelis are all over the world, but particularly in Israel, marking 2 years since Hamas's attack on the 7th of October. 1,200 people killed, 251 taken hostage, many others badly injured, and a whole country traumatised. At the site of the Nova Festival attack, people are gathering with flowers, with tributes, with candles. One of the released hostages, the oldest, Gadi Moses, said, "Nothing in life prepares you for such a situation." We also have the ongoing peace talks, indirect talks going on in Egypt. Israel and Hamas having those indirect talks about Donald Trump's 20-point peace plan. You can imagine that both Gazans and Israelis, particularly hostage families, dare not hope, really, that this could be the moment that things materially change and that the fighting stops. Let's hope that is the case. I want to take the time to play to you a conversation, to share with you a conversation I had a week or 10 days ago, I can't remember the exact date now, with a man called Eli Sharabi. He was kidnapped from his home by Hamas terrorists on that morning and held hostage for 491 days. Mostly in a tunnel beneath Gaza. He was released in February of this year, and he's published a book called Hostage. It's the first memoir by an Israeli hostage. It's out today. Sadly, his wife, Leanne Sharabi, who is from Bristol, we spoke to her brother, Stephen, a couple of times on the programme. So Leanne and their daughters, Noya and Yahel, were murdered on October the 7th. He left as he was abducted by Hamas and said, "I'll be back," thinking that they would be safe because of their British passports. But they were found murdered in the safe room of their house, cuddled together. They lost their lives. I asked him about the moment on his release, when he was hoping for that moment of reunion to happen, when he found out that his wife Leanne and his two daughters were not going to be part of that welcome party after his release.
Yes, it was the day of my release, February 8th, 2025. The Red Cross just passed me, you know, from, I was passed from Hamas to the Red Cross, and Red Cross to, after 15 minutes, transfer me to the IDF on the border. And this social worker, Leah, approached me and said, "Osnat, that's my sister, and your mom is waiting for you at the Reim base." And I said to her, "Please bring me Leanne and the girls." And she said, "Your mother and your sister